Environmental Review Commission, August 23rd, 2017. Testing.
Thanks, guys. We have order. There's no clapping, and there's no disturbances while we're conducting business. If there is any, you'll be warned once, and then I will be asked you to leave the room. We're trying to come today and hear an issue that is really near and dear to all of us. It's about water safety and peace of mind for our communities. For members, and especially the public here today, this is an official meeting of the Environmental Review Commission that is appointed every 2 years to look into matters involving the environment across North Carolina. Typically, this commission meets in Raleigh. However, because of the time sensitivity of this important issue and the need to hear from local communities directly facing it, the commission is meeting today in Wilmington. This commission has a broad scope of work affecting all parts of North Carolina, but today we are focusing on the issue of water safety in southeastern North Carolina, specifically the issue of Gen X being discharged into the Cape Fear River. While we will not solve these problems today, our effort here is a crucial first step to find out what has happened and what North Carolina can do to support our friends and family throughout the lower Cape Fear region. One of the most important sources for information on this issue is the public. If you're here today and you wish to speak, sign up on one of our sheets that the Sergeants of Arms has. Can y'all raise your hand so they'll know who to sign up with if you want to speak? Everybody signed up. Now, if you want to speak today, we're going to close off the sign-up sheet at 3 o'clock, so you need to have your name on here by 3. If someone comes in after 3, we'll take written comments, and I'm sure we'll set something on the website so you can write in and do your written comments. And we're going to do our best to accommodate everybody that signs up today, but we would ask that you limit your time to 2 minutes so we can hear from as many speakers as possible. Next, I would like to recognize my co-chairs, Representative McGrady and Representative Dixon, and see if either co-chair has any comments.
Thank you, Senator Wade. My only comment is, yes, the ERC is an oversight committee, and we have broad oversight role with respect to all things in the environment. We have the ability to recommend legislation if legislation is needed, or make recommendations to other committees and departments. So I think I speak for all of my colleagues that we're here to listen. We're here to ask some critical questions. But what everybody needs to understand is this is a broader process, meaning this is not a one-time meeting and that's the end. A few years back, we had an issue involving coal ash, and over the course of a two-year period, this committee met several times to understand and get progress reports as the state dealt with a difficult problem. And so I think we need to think about that in the context of this issue. This is just a first step, and we came to Wilmington because this is the critical place. Chairman Dixon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm well pleased that the Environmental Review Commission has statutory authority to both investigate and to make recommendations to the General Assembly regarding all aspects of the Gen X issue. Our number one concern is to have a safe, reliable source of contaminant-free water. DEQ's funding has not and is now not related to existing problems. My motivation, and I believe the motivation of this commission, is that our citizens deserve discussions based on sound scientific data and facts as we proceed. I will oppose any other approach as we discuss and investigate this critical public safety issue. Finally, this meeting is only the beginning of the investigative process. There will likely need to be several additional meetings to gather the data necessary to make our recommendations to the General Assembly. We're delighted to be here with you today.
Thank you. Next, I do want to mention that we have live mics in front of us, members. So that means if you're talking to your colleague while we're conducting business, everyone in here will hear what you're saying. So you might want to keep in mind your mic is live and hot, and it does well. Next, I've just been passed who the Sergeant Arms are today serving us. Dean Mashburn, Jonas Cherry on the House side, on the Senate side, Becky Myrick, and Giles Jeffries. Okay. Now, as we continue, I think among the legislators, there is no one here who is closer to this issue than the senators and representatives from the affected area. So to begin our hearing today, I'm going to call on Senator Michael Lee to discuss his perspective on this issue. Senator Lee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I want to start out by thanking the House and Senate leadership for appointing the committee so quickly. I know that typically this committee is not appointed until later on in the process. I also want to thank the members of the committee for coming here to Wilmington. I don't know that I've ever known a committee meeting to be outside of Raleigh, at least in my 4 or 5 years. I'm a longtime resident of the Lower Cape Fear, and you can trust that, you know, I had some prepared remarks, and as I'm looking at y'all, I just need to tell you how I feel personally, how people feel personally. And I'm going to go through something somewhat formal because I have a PowerPoint to talk about the timeline. But most of you know me in here. Some of you know me really, really well. My wife and I first found out about this, I guess it was in early June. We were still in session. And when we first found out about it, our first reaction was, did this cause the problems that our youngest child has? Anatomical abnormalities of birth that cause them to have brain surgery, spine surgery, stomach surgery, throat surgery, being hearing impaired, having to take medication every morning and every night, having a shot every single night for the next 10 years with human growth hormones. That was our first response. Was that grounded in logic, rational thought, or steeped in scientific research? It wasn't. I mean, it was emotional. It was an emotional response. And you're going to see that from a lot of people that are here. It's very, very personal. It's very emotional to folks. I know that this committee deals with all kinds of issues, regulatory issues, how certain departments are affecting the statutes that you pass and the funding that you provide to buffers and everything else. But the one thing I want to emphasize today is that it's so very personal to us that live here, that have families and children. And the reason that we're so frustrated is because of the timeline of events. And I'll go through kind of a formal timeline, but I think it's important for you to know where I'm coming from. You know, we first found out about this, and after we got through that emotional response, I met with someone from DWQ while I was in Raleigh. We talked about all kinds of stuff, and the levels came out and said it was safe. And that's what I told my wife. And then you find out, they talk about this as a new chemical or a new substance, and then you find out it's been in our water supply for 37 years. Now, it may be called something different today, but it's been in our water supply for 37 years. You hear one level is safe, and then it drops 500 times. You'll hear that the company, and we've got to think about this today. The bad actor is not the folks that are in this room or the folks who were in this room 2 months ago. The bad actors are the people that are putting these chemicals in the water. You hear that they weren't doing anything wrong, and then all of a sudden we hear there's a federal investigation going on, and now there's a state investigation going on. So people like me, and I'm an elected official, we really don't know what information to trust. So you have to understand that when the state says they're going to take care of it, we are concerned. I am speaking as, I mean, I'm a representative, but I'm also an individual. And then the administration's request came down, and respectfully, I understand studies, epidemiology, and all that, but it's been 37 years. I mean, we need an action plan today, and I think that's what people in this area, in this Cape Fear watershed, drinking the water every day, they want an action plan. So I apologize for deviating from what were really professional remarks, I wanted you to know just kind of personally how folks feel down here, and I think they feel the same way I do because I'm talking to a lot of them. So, in any event, I'm going to ask for two things today. I'm going to ask that this committee or the chairs respectfully direct the staff to work with local officials, local water and sewer authority, and UNCW to come up with an action plan and then fund it. We're going to be out of session at the end of next week, so at the end of your meeting, I'll respectfully ask that. The other thing I'm going to respectfully ask is that this committee, through your deliberations, through a PDD study or something, find out what the fundamental structural departmental failure was in our state government, such that this chemical has been there in our water supply for 37 years. Certainly predates these, the secretaries here that have only been around for 8 months, but probably predates everybody in this room. I think it's important to know how we got where we are so that we can prevent this from happening again. So since some of y'all live here, but most of you don't, I'm going to run through a quick PowerPoint on the timeline, if that's okay. Essentially just to kind of talk about how we got here. So just a quick overview. Gen-X is a chemical known as C3 dimer acid. But it was produced essentially by DuPont in two separate processes. The first process was in a plant located along the Cape Fear River in Pomona and Bladen counties, down by a company called Chemours. And I apologize if I'm not saying that right. The main production facility, Gen-X, is intentionally produced and sold commercially as part of household products, and I believe Teflon in particular. At that facility, the Gen-X is captured, waste is taken off-site for incineration, so I'm told. And everything I'm going to tell you today are essentially things that I may or may not have personal knowledge about. It's been reported. I picked up some of it. Staff has helped me through news reports and things like that. And I'm putting it all together for y'all because y'all are considering this, but I'm hopefully also pulling it all together in one concise bit for the folks who are behind me as well. At a different plant, in the same area, Gen-X is also created as a waste byproduct when they produce polyvinyl ether. So two point sources for this, and that's important. The wastewater from the polyvinyl manufacturing, which has Gen-X, is discharged ultimately into the Cape Fear River through the Chemours discharge point. This is pursuant to the discharge of the wastewater is pursuant to a discharge permit, not necessarily Gen-X. So here's the timeline I'm going to take from 1980 to 2017. This polyvinyl ether is either created at DuPont site in Fayetteville, generating the Gen-X, that was discharged in the Cape Fear River. So even though you're going to hear over and over this is new, it may have been called something else. Someone gave the analogy of ibuprofen versus Advil in the meeting. So it may be called something else, but it is the same thing. So kind of moving through that timeline, DuPont signed a consent order with the EPA agreeing to capture 99% of the Gen-X associated with commercial production. This order did not cover the waste order created during the polyvinyl ether production. That's very important to know. So that's a distinction that you would like to hear about. DuPont met with the EQ to discuss renewal set to expire in 2011, and a handwritten note from the meeting stated that the processed Gen X waste stream is captured and disposed of off-site by incinerator. In June, December of 2013, EPA funded a study by Professor Knappe at the CFPUA, took 34 to 37 samples of raw intake water from the Cape Fear. The average Gen X concentration was found to be at 631 parts per trillion, with some samples as high as 4,500 parts per trillion. August of 2014, samples of raw and drinking water were taken. Samples came back with Gen X concentrations of 400 to 500 parts per trillion, revealing that the treatment process that was being used for water treatment was not effective in filtering this out. In June 2015, DEQ and DuPont met to discuss the EPA study that identified it. What, again, they say it's a new compound found in the Cape Fear. Notes from that meeting also stated that DuPont is no longer discharging the C3 dimer acid, again, also known as Gen X, into the river. In July of 2015, Chemours was spun off as a separate company. 2016, in April, DEQ received a renewal application for the Chemours discharge permit, and to date, a renewal permit has not yet been issued. In November of 2016, Professor Knappe published a study in an environmental journal. At the end of that same month, Professor Knappe forwarded a copy of his study to DEQ employees and stated, I think it would be useful to discuss the results. In April of 2017, DEQ met twice with Professor Knappe and the CFPUA regarding the potential health effects of Gen X. So in April of 2017, Professor Knappe forwarded an abstract of a Swedish study to the CFPUA that purported that Gen X is more toxic than the PFAS, the substance it was supposed to replace. In June of 17, the article published in Star News revealing Gen X and drinking water from CFPUA. This is when my wife and I had that first discussion. That's how this happened. In June of 2017, just one day later, June 8th, DHHS released a health risk assessment that was at about 70,000 parts per trillion. Later, just not many days later, a meeting was held between Chemours, DEQ, and the governor's office. The meeting notes indicate that Michael Johnson, the environmental manager for Chemours, disclosed that Gen X had been discharged from the vinyl ether process since 1980. June 15th, Chemours met with officials from local and state government. Following this meeting, Secretary Reagan told the Women's Star News, what we have here is a situation where the company is not breaking the law. In June 19th, a few days later, DEQ began its Gen X sampling in the Cape Fear. Members of the final round of sampling revealed the Gen X concentrations, 16 to 125 parts per trillion in finished water at the treatment plants. DEQ then issued a press release stating, inspectors verified Chemours is containing all the wastewater from the relevant area, so Gen X is no longer being discharged in the Cape Fear River. And just kind of a side note from my perspective, this was explained to me by a scientist. The river's not a pipe, it's a living, breathing to some extent, entity, and just because cut off the flow doesn't mean it's not still there. It won't appear in drinking water. I think that's been proven out and tested. June 29, 2017, the Star News was informed by DEQ that Gen X was disclosed and current in all previous permit applications by DuPont, and Chemours is being discharged from the Cape Fear River. And then mid-July, DEQ and DHHS issued a press release that published the results of their sampling and lowered the health risk by more than 500 times to 140 parts per trillion. I apologize for this absolute detail, but I think it's important, since this is the few times I'm going to get to really address y'all and for y'all to discuss this, that you get kind of blow by blow of what we have been hearing in our newspapers and news reports over the last 3 months, to give you a perspective of how we feel about this issue and the contradictory information that we seem to be getting. In July of 2017, Governor Cooper to the EPA needs to establish a federal standard on GenX before we can take action. I don't think that's true at all, based upon my reading of the statutes, and I would ask that this committee really look into that statement as well. In July of 2017, the CFPUA press release announced we were saying, taken previous week showing that the GenX levels remained above that, which is now recommended by the state. The next day, the AG issued an investigative demand requiring cameras to produce documents related to GenX safety. You heard it was, they weren't breaking the law. Now we know that there are federal and state investigations. July 24th, 17, a press conference was held here in Wilmington, and I was there. You know, DEQ denies that Chemours have permission to discharge GenX into the Cape Fear River. Governor Cooper asked the SBI in that meeting publicly to determine if the criminal investigation is warranted and that he planned on a special appropriation. We talked about it. He talked about it in public. He said he would get us something before we went back into session. Just 4 days later, DEQ was served with a federal criminal subpoena from the U.S. Attorney's Office investigating this matter to get all the records relating to Chemours. August 3rd, the General Assembly reconvened for a one-day session, and we still didn't have the funding request. August 8th, Secretary Regan and Secretary Cohen wrote to lawmakers requesting the funding request of $2.58 million for additional appropriation for staff and related expenses to that staff. August 9th, I was part of a group of lawmakers that sent a letter asking a lot of questions. I'll tell you, I got a lot of grief here locally for asking questions. We weren't in session, we couldn't provide funding, but we just wanted to get to the bottom of what's going on. I wanted to get answers to the things that I'm asking this committee today to help with. That would, you know, how is this appropriation? What's the action plan to make the water safer? Now, not epidemiology studies that are going to take 10 years, certainly. Sure, we can do all those things, but what are we going to do now to help us here? August 14th and 17th, we received somewhat of a response. But we'll be asking the same questions, I believe, today to get a response. And then we arrived at today's hearing. And I want to thank those in the delegation. I want to thank also the mayor and the county commissioner for helping kind of push us forward, in particular Commissioner White, who I know made calls to have y'all come down here. Also, all the members of our local delegation, Representative Davis and Grange, I know we've met several times on this. Representative Eiler, I had a chance to talk to Representative Butler. I really texted her yesterday to try and catch up. You know, I represent a couple hundred thousand people. I also represent my family, my four children. And I've spoken with, like I said, the mayor, the chair of the county commission, delegation members, and I think they all agree. We discussed how this could go about happening, appropriating money to those who are on the front lines. Met with the CFPUA, I met several professors at UNCW. So today, before you adjourn, I'm going to ask this committee and the chairs if there's consensus to direct staff to work with UNCW and the CFPUA to formulate a serious action plan to look at all the filtering media, latest technologies, to pull not just Gen X, but all those in the family of PFAS out of our drinking water as soon as possible. And I know the CFPUA is already heading down that path. I know those of you who had the chance to visit the plant today saw what they were doing in that regard, and hopefully those tests will bear out. I'm also going to ask that this committee work with the administration. That doesn't mean there aren't going to be pointed and sometimes difficult questions that are being asked, but to solve this problem, the structural problems that we have in the state of North Carolina for protecting our drinking water, that this chemical could go into the water supply for over 37 years. And then we're now still kind of arguing about it, how we can eliminate it. I think finally that there are some folks, no one on this committee, but there are some folks that will take a crisis to further their own political aspirations. Some elected, some not elected. I would ask that the committee see past some of those folks and work on the problem. Maybe not engage those who are participating in fear-mongering and throwing lobbing bombs across the bow. That would maybe slow this process down. We're counting on y'all to help us. Again, I seriously appreciate y'all taking time on the interim. Come all the way down to Wilmington. I know some of y'all traveled a very long way to address this problem. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Senator Lee. Now the chair would entertain anyone from the local delegation, senator or representative that would like to speak at this time. Please come to the podium and let us know who you represent, your district.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. My name is Deborah Butler. I am the House Representative for District 18. I guess, like Senator Lee, I feel compelled to deviate a little bit from my prepared remarks because clearly Senator Lee has worked long and hard on a plan and a presentation, and this is the first time I'm hearing about it, and I suspect the first time most of this audience is hearing about it. So that's troubling to me in and of itself. The profound lack of transparency that we have suffered in this community is part and parcel of the problem, and this feels like another level of that to some degree. So why are we here today? I submit to you in part that it is because our governor, Roy Cooper, has made a reasonable and thoughtful request of this North Carolina General Assembly for money to pay for more scientists, toxicologists, and chemists at the Department of Environmental Quality and the Department of Health and Human Services. Those are our watchdogs for keeping our water clean. I know it comes as no surprise to most of you that those agencies have had to fire in excess of 70 staff members since 2013 due to budget cuts. And now they simply need more manpower to do the necessary testing and to enforce the permits to prevent would-be polluters from discharging harmful chemicals into our water. And it really is as simple as that. The governor, likewise, has also pushed, successfully so, and asked for a comprehensive health study from the Centers for Disease Control. I don't know how many of you have ever seen these studies, but they are extraordinarily complex. You can't just do that. No one is qualified to do that, but a very limited number of professionals. During the governor's visit to Wilmington in July, he held a meeting of elected officials, and he asked all of those in attendance to support his proposal. And everyone in that room agreed in a remarkable display of bipartisan unity to support his efforts. In fairness, Representative Eiler, who was invited, Representative Millis, who was invited, Senator Raven, who was invited, were not in attendance. So I'm not suggesting that they made such commitments, but everyone else did so. The media was in that meeting, and the media reported it that way because that is the way that it was. Senator Lee was there, as were the rest of my delegation. And then, as soon as the ink on that paper had dried, that support seemed to evaporate into thin air. What changed? What made the change of heart? We're left to speculate about. As of this moment, I have requested an appointment to this commission. You may note that I am the only member of the local representative delegation who's not been so appointed. I made a request of the Speaker of the House to that effect, and as of this moment, that appointment has been denied. That seems suspicious to me as well. And so, first there were the questions, the interrogatories from senators, most of whom do not live in this jurisdiction, And now we have, of course, an environmental committee. And my fears have been confirmed by Senator Lee that now we are going to face another plan entirely, some delays and some misdirections. So these proposals, when you think about them, particularly the one about putting CFPUA in charge of their own testing, border on the ridiculous. Truthfully, folks, most of you or many of you are lawyers. If you've been to law school one day, you know that that is an inherent conflict of interest. In the countryside, we call it the fox guarding the hen house, and that's what would be happening if you put CFPUA in charge of water quality. I'm told that we might also hear a proposal directing some funding to UNCW instead of DEQ or DHHS. And while I believe that university involvement might be helpful in some adjunct capacity, it makes far more sense that the primary responsibility lie with the entities that actually issue the permits, know the content of the permits, and have the rulemaking authority to penalize violators. This process has proven effective when properly staffed and functioning as intended. And that is how the discharge of Gen X has been stopped in our waters as of this moment. When we learned of Gen X in our water in early June, I immediately wrote an urgent memorandum and I placed it on every representative's desk asking for an immediate appropriation. And here I am today again asking you to honor the governor's reasonable, specific request for help. The pleas of this community for help. It is $2.5 million in a $23 billion budget that has a rainy day fund. It's raining in Wilmington. And we need that appropriation. These agencies need the resources to put teeth behind these permits. What good is a permit if you can't test the water and penalize violations? So, my suggestion to you is that we will have no public confidence, we will have no buy-in of the citizenry if we put agencies other than our tried and true DEQ and DHHS in charge of these responsibilities. So if we do that, if we take that tack, I really think we're sending a message loud and clear, and that is that we're just going to continue to ignore any plan unless either the Speaker of the House or the President of the Senate came up with it. So, unfortunately, I see yet another layer of misdirection, of a lack of transparency, and I just feel like if we gave the manpower to the agencies who knew how to protect us, we would be far better served than creating another and new wheel. Thank you for your attention.
Thank you. There will be no applause. This is your last warning. If you applaud and disrupt the meeting, you'll be asked to leave. Next, I know there's members on this commission that might want to speak, and I'm sorry, I should have told you it's okay to go to the mic now if you would like to. Any members from that delegation that would like to go up and speak? You don't have to wait.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For those of you in the audience who are listening, I am Representative Holly Grange. We are standing in my district right now. And I personally would like to thank the members of the commission for taking the time to come here to Wilmington to see what we have been dealing with over the last several months. This is not a political issue to me. To me, this is a public health issue. And there are still many questions that need to be answered, and that's the purpose of this commission, is to answer those questions. We need to find out what processes failed so that this situation would occur here in Wilmington and who knows where else in the state. So I thank you for coming here to address this. What is foremost in my mind is that we all citizens, deserve clean, drinking water that is free of all contaminants. And I know that that's probably our our purpose here today, and I'm sure that we all want that, have that same desire. Unfortunately, I feel like I need to defend myself from accusations from a colleague today. I will not deviate from our task here, our mission, to address those. Our goal here is simple. It is to address the problem as it exists here in Wilmington. We need to solve the problem here now. We need to get the Gen X out of our water. We need to make sure that there aren't any other contaminants in our water. And secondly, we need to make sure that what has happened here does not happen elsewhere in North Carolina. We need to be able to study the processes in place to make sure that something like this doesn't fall through the cracks again. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Are there any other members? Representative Davis.
Thank you, Chairman Wood. I have a unique position of being born and raised in Wilmington. In the presence of Gen X and other possible pollutants in the Cape Fear River, it caused me to have serious concerns about the quality of my drinking water. I am concerned about my wife, my son, his wife, my two grandsons, one of which is 4 1/2, the other 6 months, and numerous relatives all that live in Wilmington. I want to make sure, as I assure you all, that the family that I love are protected with having safe water to drink. I'm concerned about my constituents who live in House District 19, which is comprised of the southern portion of the city of Wilmington, Weissman Beach, Carolina Beach, and Curie Beach. I want to make sure, as I'm sure you do, that those individuals that I represent and truly care about are protected with having safe water to drink. I'm also concerned about the individuals who live outside my legislative district, not only in New Hanover County, but throughout the state of North Carolina. I want to make sure, as I'm sure you do, that those individuals who I also truly care about are protected with having safe water to drink. As a Republican, I'm not here to point fingers. I'm not here to place blame. Instead, I am here, and thankful to be a member of this advisor of this committee, to get more information that is relevant and pertinent to the situation, have a healthy dialogue among those people who are here, not only on the committee, but in the audience, and share our concerns, and proceed in a positive, productive manner. As a lawyer, I prefer to look at a particular situation, identify the problem, investigate the matter, determine a solution, and bring that solution to a successful completion in order to solve the problem. And that is what I know we are here for today to do, and I'm confident that is exactly what we're going to do, no matter how long it may take. And with that having been said, I would like to support what Senator Lee had talked about. He and I were on the same mindset when we got together and talked about this, and that is, if the legislature is to appropriate additional funds to address this present situation with the Cape Fear River, I recommend and support this funding going to the local University of North Carolina at Wilmington and the local Cape Fear Public Utility Authority to address the quality of our local drinking water. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Representative Davis. Representative Allen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm Frank Isler. I represent District 17, which is about 5/8 of Brunswick County, the lower part of Brunswick County. I share Brunswick County with Representative Butler, and we work together on many issues together for Brunswick County. And Honorable Secretaries, thank you for being here. And this is the first time I've presented this presentation. I think it's excellent. Brunswick County has already passed, and I, they're at my place. I don't know if anybody else has got it or not, but I think they've made available to me that passed two resolutions asking basically that the General Assembly, the governor, and the respective departments do our job. And I'm sure they'll be made available to anyone who wants to see them. But I appreciate the county doing that. Appreciate our county commission chairman being here today. But we've got to do our job in the near future and in the distant future. Central Raven is also interested in this. I don't believe he's going to be here today. Two questions come to mind, and I'm going to close very quickly. Wonder why we issue permits before we know what's safe in the water instead of afterward. And what has been happening the past 37 years, and how do we correct it?
Thank you. Representative Mills.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the Commission, the public, and those who may be listening at home. I have the privilege of representing the 16th District in the State House, as my colleagues know. That includes Pender and Western Onslow counties. The constituents of my district, including myself and my family, not only do we drink the water from the same source involving Pender County, but we also travel to our places at work. Sometimes here in New Hanover, we're also drinking the water that is extremely alarming in terms of the timeline has laid out. If any of you all find any comfort in a lot of the dialogue that was shared here by Senator Lee, it will be beyond me. I've been concerned for a while, and I'm even more concerned as the dialogue has continued to be laid out, not only from past administrations, current administrations, as well as what has happened here in the public. I wanted to also say, I want to repeat what has already been said very respectfully and on point by Senator Lee, Representative Grange, Representative Davis, Representative Oller, and some of what Representative Butler had to say. And I will say this, we had the privilege of visiting a water treatment plant in New Hanover County today. I want to make sure that the Commission and the public realizes that examining the water treatment process and the potential cleanup of Gen X is secondary to the primary problem. The primary problem is the pollutants and the contaminants should have never been in the river in the first place. And I'm here today as a part of this commission and also as a citizen to figure out how it happened, why it happened, and to ensure that it doesn't happen again. As we look at matters both legislatively in our purview and appropriation-wise in our purview, I'm comforted that we have your attention across this state on behalf of this local delegation, and that we have the opportunity to address what is wrong and make sure that history doesn't repeat itself. Thank you for the opportunity, Madam Chair, to share, and look forward to some important line of questions.
Thank you. And we thank all the members of the local delegation that have spoken. Was there anyone else that wanted to speak before we move on? Now we'll go to the local elected officials. And I would like to recognize Woody White, the chair of the new Hanover County Commission.
Chairman Wade, Co-Chairman McGrady and Dixon, I am tempted to ask for an immediate appropriation for a grant for air conditioning funding. I'm going to resist that temptation and suggest that perhaps someone in our maintenance department look at the thermostat on the wall. My name is Woody White, and I represent 220,000 citizens together with my four colleagues on the county commission. June 8 was the day that we first heard about this. I've known Sawyer Lee since virtually the day he was born, my youngest son. And when Mike was up here talking about, or Senator Lee, to meet with the protocol, when Senator Lee was up here talking about Sawyer, having witnessed personally the struggles daily, weekly, monthly, the dozens of times he and Heidi have traveled out of this district, out of this county, north to other hospitals, seeking answers, looking for help for their son. I feel guilty that I didn't think about Sawyer on June 8th. I thought about the two miscarriages my wife had before our oldest son was born. And that's what all these people back here have been thinking about with their children, their grandchildren. We haven't, at that moment in time, considered science or logic or who's at fault. You know, who was asleep at the switch, what should have been done, what's the statutory scheme or regulatory process is the best. I wasn't thinking about that. Over the next 7 days, I felt like, and all of my citizens felt like, we were at the Battle of Dunkirk. Y'all seen that movie? It's popular. It's out this summer. History teaches us that for whatever reasons, the military apparatus in place left hundreds of thousands of soldiers on the beaches waiting to be devoured by an invading force. And that's what Mayor Saffo and I felt like. Now, I don't know what happened, who did what. I know somebody put something in the river that didn't belong there. And somebody in the state should have prevented it and didn't. I don't know if he or she was a Republican, a Democrat. I don't know if it was a man or a woman, or a consortium of all of the above. And I don't care. I do know that about 7 days later, on June 15th, when the mayor and I and our respective bodies asked for Kimors to come here, and we met across that hallway, they did that. I don't know why in the world they did it, who their counsel was, who their lawyer was. I wonder if they still work for them. Because they came here, we found out that Ted, his family, his children and grandchildren, and my family, and my children, and a lot of the other people have been drinking this stuff for 37 years. We didn't know that. They told us. The state didn't tell us. There wasn't a website we could go to. There wasn't a permit we could look at. Secretary Reagan and I sat next to each other and looked at the permit. Nothing in there. I said, oh, well, we got a fancy answer for you. That's because in 2009 we asked the federal government for permission to produce this stuff and call it Gen X, a fancy name. Put two capital letters in it, maybe we'll capture the attention of the free market and convince them to put this stuff in our frying pans and we'll make billions of dollars. Let's call it Gen X. That's great. I don't care what it's called. What I do know is that its predecessor chemical poisoned tens of thousands of people in Ohio and West Virginia, and DuPont paid hundreds of millions of dollars after 17 years, finally admitting that they poisoned people, willfully, intentionally. We didn't know that on June 15th. They told us about Gen X. Now, what if they had decided, you know what, we're going to get good legal counsel here, and politely, we're going to decline the request to come down there and meet with the mayor and the commissioner there. We're just not going to say anything. We wouldn't know that sitting here today. DEQ couldn't tell us that. DHHS probably couldn't tell us that. For decades, nobody's told us that. So, I hope that you all will not get sucked into the inside-the-beltway mentality of playing politics with this. I see why both sides would be tempted to do that. There's plenty of blame somewhere. I don't know where it lies. I think evidence at some point during the enforcement process and the oversight process needs to answer those questions. Why did Saffo and White and their guys and gals have to figure this out for 37 years? Why did the state do it? So those are good questions. And in future enforcement actions and oversight functions, we have to know those answers. But this process has exposed systemic and unimaginable regulatory failures at the federal and the state level. And we have an incredible opportunity as a community and as a state, because this is a North Carolina issue. We have an opportunity here to set aside whatever arguments we might have on other issues, and agree on what everybody else agrees to. We won't save drinking water. We don't want people to pollute it, and if you pollute it, you're going to get punished. And we got to have an enforcement mechanism that ensures the people that the water's safe. It's that simple. If you believe that the governor's $2.5 million request and a few scientists and epidemiologists answers the question, if that solves the problem, excellent. Take a vote right now or today and forward that to your peers in the legislature and vote on it next week and give them the money. If you think that the problem is more systemic and longer term and deeper and requires persistence and hour-by-hour monitoring and attention by qualified and competent people to ensure us that we have safe drinking water, then I encourage you to go that route. I cannot thank you enough for the leaders of your two bodies seeing the wisdom and coming down here and being available for our community to witness you deliberate and begin what I hope will be a long and lengthy process that will lead to the safest drinking water in the United States. Why can't we set that as a goal? Let's attain it. We can do it. Thank you all very much.
Thank you, Chairman Hoyt. Now we'll hear from Mayor Bill Sappo.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I want to thank the delegation of senators and House representatives for coming here to Wilmington. This is obviously a very serious issue for our community, for our region. Obviously, this affects hundreds of thousands of people in southeast of North Carolina who obtain their drinking water from the Cape Fear River. As Chairman White alluded to, safe drinking water is what we want, bottom line. We want the water to be clean that we're pulling out of the Cape Fear and delivering to the citizens of this region. What I have personally found in this whole process is federal laws, state laws, federal agencies overseeing this, state agencies seeing this, sometimes them not talking to each other, or if they're talking to each other, the regulatory process at the federal level is different from the regulatory process possibly at the state level. And Woody's right. We have an opportunity here to get it right and make it a bipartisan issue, because this is a public health issue for not only citizens in this region, but throughout the state of North Carolina. Because one thing I have found is compounds and chemicals are in every river in the state of North Carolina. The citizens of this great state should be given that information to know at least what is in their drinking water. In some cases we know, in some cases we don't know. In some cases we know where it's coming from, in some cases we don't know where it's coming from. We know that the EPA has issued studies. Those studies should be shared with the citizens of this community and every community throughout the state immediately. And the results of those studies should be given to us immediately. Because what I'll hear is, well, that's a regulated compound, a regulated chemical, or that's an unregulated chemical, and we really don't know what that chemical is. But it's in the drinking water, and you're drinking it. And maybe 20 years from now, when a study's done somewhere, somebody's going to tell us, oh, by the way, that causes cancer, or leukemia, or something. We all drink it, so we should be given the opportunity to know what's in that water. And then we should try to find out where those sources are coming from. Put a stop to it. Nobody should be putting anything into the drinking water. Anything that we don't know about. And understand the health aspects of those chemicals. So I ask you to come together to work out a policy that really reviews this thing top down. Make sure that we do have the safest drinking water in the country. And I think the issue in regards to drinking water, clean, safe drinking water in this country needs a much further discussion. But that's in Washington, not here at the state level, but you folks have the opportunity and the duty to provide us good, safe drinking water. I also want to say thank you to the secretaries that have been here at every meeting that we've asked them to be here. The governor's come down here, and you folks have come down here. As our elected representatives and the people that work for the citizens of this state, we appreciate your attention to this matter. Let's find out what the problem is, and let's fix it as quickly as possible. And anything you can do to bring relief to these folks down here in southeast North Carolina, we would welcome. Thank you for being down here today.
Thank you, Mayor. And now we hear from Chairman Frank Williams.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the Commission. I'm Frank Williams, and I'm Chair of the Brunswick County Commission. And I represent the 125,000 citizens in Brunswick County who receive their drinking water either directly or indirectly from the county. I want to just say that I think Senator Lee's emotional reaction to this, and Chairman White's emotional reaction to this, the day that we heard the news reflects what almost every one of my constituents felt. And I can sum it up in one word, fear. Fear of the unknown. This was something we didn't know about, didn't know what it was, still don't know that much, as much about it as we need to. So that was everyone's initial reaction. And I hope that you guys will take that into account, that that's what we're hearing from the people we represent. I'm going to keep this as short as I can, but our board did pass two resolutions, which your chairs have, and our staff will provide to your clerk electronically for the rest of you. And we have two basic requests. The first one of those, and this is something you've already heard, but that's if we don't know what impact something's going to have, then it should not be allowed to be put into the water until we do. That doesn't make any sense that once something's been in the water for 20 years, or in this case, possibly since I was 10 years old, then we find out what it does and start not allowing it to be placed into the water. So that's the first request. And the second one is where I think some of the frustration in Chairman White's voice came from. And that's that water quality is an issue that should not, in any circumstances, become a politicized issue. And I think that's some of the frustration that many of us have felt. Our approach to this is very simple. Fix it and make sure it doesn't happen again. And I'm going to address some remarks that were made earlier by the representative who represents my sliver of Northern Brunswick County. She implied that perhaps you guys might not be open to any plan that did not come from Speaker Moore or President Pro Tem Berger. But the flip side of that is you should not automatically rubber stamp a plan because it comes from the governor. My constituents don't care whose name is on the plan. They just want it to work. And that's what I hope you guys will take from this. This should not be about who gets the credit or any of that. It should simply be about how do we address this issue and prevent it from happening again. Our professional staff in Brunswick County is here. Our county manager, Ann Hardy, our director of health and human services, David Stanley. Our utility staff are available to you in any way that they can be to help you get to the bottom of this. I would encourage you, as you're working with New Hanover County and the City of Wilmington and Cape Fear Public Utility Authority, don't forget about Brunswick County and Pender County and the other counties in this region as well. We all get our water from the Cape Fear River, and that's the only goal that we have, is to make sure that our water is safe and clean to drink. I will close with two final thoughts. Don't put a Band-Aid on this, and don't be tempted to do that. That's what so often happens in a two-year cycle with a 24-hour news media. And secondly, it is amazing what you can accomplish when no one's worried about placing blame or who gets the credit. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Chairman. I would like to remind everyone that the cutoff time to sign up to speak today is 3 o'clock. You have about 25 minutes left to sign up, so please find a sergeant at arms and sign up if you would like to speak today. The chair thinks it'd be helpful for the commission and members of the public in attendance to hear an overview from our nonpartisan legislative staff on general water quality permitting requirements and the issue of emerging contaminants. And at this time, the chair is going to recognize Jeff Hudson and Jennifer McGinnis from our staff to do this presentation.
Thank you, Madam Chair. In the interest of time, I'll stay back here and give the presentation. As the chair noted, we've been asking you a very brief overview of Clean Water Act regulation of water quality and the regulation of toxic substances. These are the topics for the committee today. I'm going to cover the Clean Water Act, and my colleague Jennifer McGinnis is going to cover the regulation of toxic substances. The Clean Water Act prohibits anybody from discharging pollutants through a point source into waters of the United States unless they have a National Pollutant Discharge Elimination System, or NPDES, permit. This is the discharge permit you've heard referenced several times today. The term waters of the United States is defined very broadly. It covers navigable waters and their tributaries, and that certainly includes the Cape Fear River and its tributaries. The term pollutant is also defined very broadly and may include chemical waste from a manufacturing facility. The implementation of the Clean Water Act is generally under the responsibility of the United States Environmental Protection Agency. It's responsible for the implementation of the act and for issuing the discharge permits. However, it may also delegate this responsibility to states if the states so desire to receive that delegation. North Carolina is one of the many states that has received delegation for implementation of the Clean Water Act and issuance of water quality permits We're North Carolina. And in North Carolina, it's our Department of Environmental Quality that's specifically charged with implementing the act and issuing the permits. So for the permit requirements, an application, when applying for an NPDES permit, the permit applicant is required to disclose significant detail regarding the nature and composition of its expected discharges. And the NPDES permits themselves contain limits on what can be discharged and also contain monitoring and reporting requirements. The limits for the permits are generally going to specify the level of pollutant or pollutant parameter in a discharge. For certain pollutants, EPA sets the limits, but for others, EPA or state regulatory agencies must develop these limits on a case-by-case basis. For the monitoring and reporting requirements, a permit will require that a facility sample its discharges and notify EPA and DEQ of the results. In addition, the permit will require the facility to notify EPA and DEQ when a facility determines it is not in compliance with the permit. EPA and DEQ will also send out inspectors to ensure compliance with the permit. As far as enforcement of these requirements, EPA and DEQ have a number of enforcement mechanisms to take action against violators of their permit requirements. They may issue administrative orders that require facilities to correct violations and assess monetary penalties. They may also pursue civil and criminal actions that may include mandatory injunctions or penalties, as well as jail sentences for persons found willfully violating requirements and endangering the health and welfare of the public or the environment. There's also a mechanism for citizens to enforce under the Clean Water Act, the citizen supervision, where the general public can enforce permit conditions. The facility monitoring reports are available to the public so the public can review them. And if any member of the general public finds that a facility is violating its permit, that member of the public can independently start a legal action as long as the regulatory agencies are not pursuing enforcement action. Finally, there's a permit shield provision under the Clean Water Act. Basically, compliance with your permit is deemed compliance with the discharge limitations under the Clean Water Act. This is the case even if there are regulatory changes regarding a pollutant during the lifetime of these five-year permits. This is designed to provide some regulatory certainty for a permittee. However, this permit shield provision does not apply if a pollutant is discovered to be a toxic. And my colleague Jennifer McGinnis is going to talk about that.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and members. As Senator Wade indicated, the co-chairs have asked that we provide you a brief understanding of how emerging or new chemicals are regulated. The basic framework for regulation of toxic chemicals was enacted in the mid-70s, and it is the Toxic Substances Control Act, otherwise known as TSCA, which gave the United States Environmental Protection Agency with respect to industrial chemicals the authority to review new chemicals before they're manufactured, to gather information on existing chemicals in commerce, and to regulate unreasonable risk to health, the environment, from the manufacture, processing, distribution, and commerce, use, or disposal of these chemicals. TSCA broadly defines the term chemical substance as any organic or inorganic substance of a particular molecular identity, including any combination of such substances occurring in whole or in part as a result of a chemical reaction or occurring in nature, and any element or uncombined radical. TSCA does have specific exemptions. These include certain pesticides, tobacco products, and notably also TSCA does exempt what is referred to as byproducts from some of the TSCA requirements. So generally, although TSCA was enacted in 1976, it generally had been viewed as ineffective since its enactment over that 40-year period. only five chemicals in existence had been banned under FOSTA, and only four chemicals had been prohibited from coming to market out of 23,000 new chemicals. So there were stakeholder concerns about FOSTA from all sides because of the seeming inability to regulate under TSCA. The states have been given a good deal of freedom, and so kind of a patchwork of regulations popped up among the states on toxic substances, which of course gave some concern to chemical manufacturers, and also there were concerns from other stakeholder groups that the reason that TSCA was ineffective was because the way TSCA had been drafted made the kind of analytical requirements so burdensome for US EPA that it was just nigh unto impossible. So for many years, TSCA reform had been introduced at the federal level, but it was not until about this time last year where Congress actually enacted TSCA reform. Basically, there are several key components to that TSCA reform. One, it requires EPA to evaluate existing chemicals with clear and enforceable deadlines, and to systematically prioritize and evaluate chemicals on a specific and enforceable schedule. It establishes a new risk-based safety standard requiring EPA to evaluate chemicals purely on the basis of health risks that they pose. Furthermore, it establishes increased public transparency for chemical information, including new substantiation requirements for certain types of confidentiality claims, as that had been a problem under TSCA as enacted. It was estimated that as much as 95% of the information that EPA was getting on chemicals was claimed to be trade secret, and that prohibited EPA from sharing that information. So again, the TSCA reform has some substantiation requirements for those trade secret claims, but perhaps one of the most significant changes of the TSCA reform is that it does alter the landscape on state and federal preemption of state law. So now basically TSCA precludes a good deal of state action on a chemical if US EPA determines through a risk evaluation that the chemical does not prevent an unreasonable risk. Also, there is what's known as pause preemption, which means that if US EPA is in the process of a risk evaluation, a state is temporarily preempted from taking action on that chemical until US EPA has finalized that risk evaluation. But as we understand it, a certain amount of regulatory authority is still retained by the states. We understand that states can act on any chemical or particular use if US EPA, one, has not addressed the issue, or two, they still retain the authority to adopt and enforce chemical regulations that pertain to water quality, air quality, and waste treatment or disposal, notwithstanding EPA action. These regulations, however, cannot restrict the manufacturer's processing, distribution, or use of a chemical substance. They can't address the same hazards and exposure with respect to the conditions that US EPA has placed on them. But they still may exert substantial authority, as we understand it, with water quality, air quality, and waste treatment and disposal regulations. So that is kind of a historical perspective on regulatory authority over toxic chemicals and bringing us up to date with the recent changes at the federal level.
Thank you. Members, we have a lot of people that want to speak today. So I'm going to give us a minute if you have any questions on the permitting process while staff has just gone over it. So if there's a burning question that you really need to ask, I'll entertain a few, but we need to move on because we do want to hear from the public today.
Representative Harrison.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thanks to you, Jeff and Jennifer, for that explanation. I'll try to be brief. I've been somewhat confused about where we are at the state level in terms of regulating toxic chemicals. This is something that Representative Grady and I have been working on for several years. So the EPA leaves a window, TSCA leaves a window open if they aren't looking at the chemical, but we have enacted legislation at the state level in the past couple of years, one, the Harsh Amendments, where we can't anything stronger than what the federal standard, and also the Senate Bill 781 that created a lot of hurdles for enacting new legislation. So I'm just wondering where we're at state level to respond to this kind of emergency. And if I recall correctly, House Bill 162, which was passed by the Senate and is sitting in House Rules right now, the Senate Committee Substitute eliminates an exemption for acting on an emergency basis to address public health, safety, and welfare. Thanks.
Stan.
Thank you, Madam Chair. As to the Hardison Amendment question, I would just note that there are several limitations to the reach of the Hardison Amendment. So the Hardison Amendment, and for those of you who are not familiar with this, which is probably most everybody in the room except for legislators, it basically prevents certain agencies from adopting rules more stringent than federal law requires. And amongst those agencies are the Department of Environmental Quality and the Environmental Management Commission. However, there are several exceptions to that prohibition, one being if there's a serious and unforeseen threat to public health, safety, or welfare. Also, if the General Assembly specifically directs an agency to act, then it could act disregarding the Hardison Amendment. Also, the General Assembly itself can enact regulatory prohibitions or limitations. This Hardison Amendment language only applies to the agencies and does not limit the General Assembly. I've been trying to open up House Bill 162 on my laptop, have been unsuccessful. I'm familiar with the provision you're asking about, but don't recall it in enough detail to actually answer your question. If I can manage to get it up, I'll try to answer it. If not, when I get back to Raleigh, I will respond on that.
All right, now we'll move on. I think many people following the Gen X issue have read news articles regarding the permitting process that Mr. Hudson just discussed. And as an aide to the commission, the chair has arranged for Dr. Larry Cahoon, a professor at the University of North Carolina at Wilmington, to brief the commission. Dr. Cahoon, it is our pleasure to have you before the commission today. I'll turn it over to you in just a moment, but before I do, I'll ask that you begin your remarks by telling the commission a little bit about your professional background. And with that, Dr. Cahoon, you have the floor. And I believe you have a handout, and if you'll pass them up here to the Sergeant Arms or to our clerk, we'll get them passed out.
There you go. Thank you.
All right. Thank you all for coming to Wilmington to hear from us today. By way of background, I'm usually described as a biological oceanographer. However, I'm currently teaching a course in limnology, which is the study of freshwater ecosystems. And with a partner, I developed and co-taught a course called Forensic Environmental Science, in which we taught students how to investigate environmental crime. So I've got a bit more background than the term biological oceanographer would suggest. The handout that I've provided to you comes in three parts. One is a set of four pages of notes I'm going to speak from today. The second is a letter from Mr. Johnson at DuPont to an individual with the Division of Water Quality in 2002. I probably won't discuss that letter, but it's there for your reference. It's part of the public file. It's available to the public with regard to this issue. The last portion is another publication. I believe you've all had the Sun et al. 2016 paper shared with you by staff. The one that I've included in this packet is published by another set of folks, EPA scientists at the Research Triangle Park, and it's more of an overview of the whole business of fluorinated hydrocarbon chemistry and environmental interactions. So the first thing that I want to do, and this starts off with the first page of this handout, Let me ask you this. How many of you have taken organic chemistry? Cool. All right. 4 out of 20? Nice. How many of you made A's? Booyah. This is good. This is better than I expected. Those of us who've taken organic chemistry know how complicated organic chemistry can be. And I think that's a good starting point. For the rest of you, just try to bear with. I'll try and keep this simple. Organic compounds are difficult to name. When we call something Gen X, what does that term mean? It's a slang term. It has no formal definition or meaning. It is a term of convenience, and that's all it is. There are other slang terms. They're pretty sloppy chemistry, in my view, that have been used to describe this in a lot of the discussion that has taken place. Some of those terms here, HFPO, I have been told that HFPO is Gen X. No, it's not. HPFO or HFPO dimer acid, whatever that is. C3 dimer acid, whatever that is. If you're going to be rigorous and professional in discussing or disclosing chemical constituents of a discharge, you have to use the proper names. Now, for each of the two compounds I've listed on this page, one is the carboxylic acid version of Gen X, the other is the ammonium salt version, there are three chemically acceptable names for it. And you can read those things. I'm not even going to try and read them out loud. It'll baffle everyone. Those are all legitimate. Go to the permits and find any of those names in those permits. The problem with the nomenclature is, again, you have multiple acceptable names for these compounds. So rather than use one name or another, that apparently have no relationship to each other. When you look at them, they're all different, right? They all name the same exact chemical, okay? What we use instead is the chemical abstract system number, the CAS number or CAS number. That is an unambiguous identifier, and that is the standard we use for identifying compounds in permits. The CAS number is a unique identifier for each molecule. Gen X, the carboxylic acid version of it, is CAS number 13252-13-6. There's no other compound like that. Okay? If that's not in the permit application, and if it's not in the permit itself, how do you know what compound you're talking about? Okay? That's the first point. When we talk about Gen X, we're not talking about a single compound. We're talking about a cocktail of perfluorinated compounds that are present in our drinking water. It isn't just Gen X. Matter of fact, the studies that have been published and which you have seen, and there are more of them than the one you have had sent to you, indicate that a long list of compounds are actually present. These are industrially produced fluorinated hydrocarbon compounds. Some of them occur in the Cape Fear River at concentrations far in excess of the concentrations of Gen X, whatever that is. And it's important to understand that we are drinking a cocktail of perfluorinated compounds, many of which are barely known to science in terms of health effects and that sort of thing. We know a little bit about Gen X. We know a good bit more about two of the compounds on that list. Notice that I've identified every one of them by a CAS number. One of those, PFOA, is the common term for it, or C8, which is the slang term for it, has no chemical meaning. It's basically been phased out of production because we found out that it's hazardous in about 6 different dimensions. And we have phased out production of that because of that problem. I'm not going to comment about lawsuits and all of that, but there have been lawsuits about PFOA. PFOS, which is also on that list, those two, by the way, are in bold letters in the handout you have. That one has also been studied rather more extensively and found to be hazardous in some number of dimensions. In other words, it causes various kinds of problems, not just cancer, but other kinds of health problems. The other compounds, not so much. We know much less about them. Notice also in this list, I've identified three of those compounds where I say lots of this. These were found at much higher concentrations in the Cape Fear River and in our drinking water, the finished drinking water coming through the Sweeney treatment plant that you toured this morning, than Gen X, whatever that is. So we're not talking about a single compound here. Let's be clear about that. And the permitting of the discharge of Gen X ignores the fact, one way or the other, that we're talking about a host of compounds. Okay? Were they in the permit? Look for the CAS numbers and see if they work. They're not. Some number of wits have commented publicly, I'm not accusing any of you of being these wits, but commented that, this is page 3, a part per trillion is no big deal. Right? Part per trillion is a very small number. Sure. But you got to look at it another way. And what I've done is the calculation. I'm not going to make you go through it. There will not be a quiz at the end. I've already taught 2 courses today. I'm done. But I have calculated how many molecules of Gen X one part per trillion represents in 1 liter of water. Most of us drink a couple liters of water a day. And it comes out to 1.8 trillion molecules of that compound alone in a liter of water. Okay. I checked the CFPOA website recently, and the last data that I saw for the concentrations of Gen X in the finished water, the water we're still drinking as of a couple weeks ago, was 40 parts per trillion. The 1.8 trillion times 40 is about 72 trillion molecules of Gen X in each liter of water you drink. It's about 1 trillion cells in the human body. So that works out to about 72 molecules of Gen X, a poorly studied biologically active compound, per cell. That's bad enough. But Gen X appears, from what little we know about it, to have a particular affinity for several particular organs in the human body. The liver, which is pretty important, and the ovaries or testes, which are also important. So, in fact, when those molecules interact with your body, they're probably interacting a whole lot more with the cells in those tissues and organs than with the cells in your feet or your hair. Okay? The last point I want to make from page 4, we're up against a very challenging situation here. There's a lot of these compounds out there. Most of them are not studied at all. We know nothing about the health effects of those 3 compounds I mentioned on page 2. Nothing. Hardly known to science. What's true about almost every perfluorinated or polyfluorinated compound is they don't break down in the environment. Okay? There is no natural treatment process to get rid of them. When we try to remove them from the water supply, because there's so many of them and they have such different characteristics among them, we find out that no single treatment system will do the job. Certainly the CFPUA found that out the hard way. They found out that their finished water contained just as much as the stuff coming in. We've had a lot of discussion here in Wilmington about treatment technologies, granular absorbent, granular activated charcoal, reverse osmosis, and so forth. There's no happy answer. The bottom line is we must not allow these compounds to be in the drinking water in the first place. I'll stop there.
We thank you.
There may be questions. So.
Well, we thank you, and I'll give a few minutes here. Now, remember, we have a lot of speakers that we want to get to. They've been so patient out there. So, is there... All right, Senator Bishop, do you have a burning desire?
Yes, Thank you, Madam Chairman. I'll be brief. Professor Cahoon, my name is Dan Bishop. I saw an interview that you gave to WBTV in a news story. That's the local station where I'm from, and you appeared in there to take issue with a statement that was attributed to Secretary Regan that in a prior media report that said what we have here is a situation where the company is not breaking the law.
Mm-hmm.
And your comment in the interview was it is abundantly clear that the presence of these compounds in their discharges, referring to Chemours, were not disclosed as required by law. How do you arrive at that conclusion?
I've seen the permit applications and the permits. Those compounds that I've listed here and identified correctly are not listed in the permit applications or in the permits themselves. The requirement is explicit to disclose what's going to be in your discharge. The letter you have in your packet of stuff for me is a letter that explicitly recognizes that some number of fluorinated compounds are going to be present in the discharge, are going to be toxic, that was acknowledged, and are going to occur at concentrations above the 100 microgram per liter disclosure requirement in the law. So I'd like to see any evidence that these compounds were properly disclosed and properly permitted. I have not seen that yet.
Follow up, Madam Chair.
Follow up.
You're referring to the letter from DuPont dated April 23, 2002?
Correct.
So that was, 15 years ago?
Yep.
And I understand that that a DEQ spokesperson specified that this passage put DEQ on notice that Gen X was being discharged into the Cape Fear River. And I don't know if it's in the letter that you're referring to or where this comes from, but the quote was, the HFPO and vinyl ether monomers are used to manufacture various fluorochemical products such as Chemours Teflon. Wastewater generated from this facility is discharged to the Chemours wastewater treatment plant. I don't know if it's, are those two sentences in this letter, or are you referring to other material in the letter?
I've seen those sentences.
Are they sufficient?
No.
To put DEQ on notice of the discharge of this particular?
I think they were sufficient to have prompted DEQ to ask more questions. And my point at the very beginning was, if you don't know enough organic chemistry, you might not know enough to be able to ask those questions and get the right answers. So I think that's a question that needs to be examined. Who was able to ask the right questions, and did they or did they not? I don't know the answer to that.
One more follow-up, thank you.
Yep.
Follow-up.
Do you have any insight into the expertise of the people who have been asking the questions or in position to ask the questions since 2002?
From what I can tell, I haven't seen that level of expertise demonstrated in the limited exchange that I've seen. I don't talk to these people on a regular basis. I have been vicariously present for exchanges between DEQ folks and other folks about, HFPO is Gen X. Well, no, it's not. HFPO can form Gen X. Well, that's not the point. So I haven't been satisfied that the level of technical expertise, at least in those exchanges that I've seen, is sufficient to have nailed down what was really going on here.
One last question.
Follow up.
Given them what you have seen, do you have any insight at all into how DEQ came to the conclusion that the company was not violating the law?
I have no idea how they got to that point.
Thank you,
Madam Chair.
Well, I have Chairman Dixon was next, and then Representative Millis. And then...
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Now, remember, we're going to keep this short.
Very brief. In reference to your analysis of the current drinking water, have you done any comparative testing on stuff like this that we consider safe?
I have not. I don't do this kind of chemistry myself. Detlef Canapi at NC State and his lab do those analyses, and they have done quite a bit of follow-up to the work that you've seen published. They've analyzed different treatment systems and so forth. Bottom line is that the RO water seems to be the best so far, but I have not seen all the data from that. I'm a biologist. I don't do the fluorochemistry analyses, which require fairly sophisticated chemical processes. My colleague, Ralph Mead, would be able to answer those questions better. He's going to be getting involved in doing these kinds of analyses in conjunction with the Cape Fear Public Utility Authority.
Thank you. Representative Mills.
Yeah. Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Doctor, for your remarks. Quick question here. It's something I've been monitoring for a while, and it seems like a little bit of your testimony may shed some light. You may have a proper response, an educated response to this question. That is, if there's a lack of knowledge to properly regulate these compound cocktails, as you call them, why should members of the legislature and members of the public have confidence that the levels that have been set from a health standpoint clearly reflects acceptable levels of public health? I'm perplexed by, if you don't have the knowledge to regulate it properly, how do you have the knowledge to convey to the public that it's healthy?
I think they're two slightly different situations. One is that evaluating the health effects is often done by health professionals who then publish that work. Part of the problem there is that many of these studies take a very long period of time. A lot of them are done by the industry themselves, and they may or may not be released to the public. So the technical expertise to do those things is separate from the regulatory agencies. The regulatory agencies, EPA and so forth, don't do these kinds of studies directly. They may contract for them, or they may rely on private entities, again, often the regulated entities themselves, to do those studies. The regulation of these things is more strictly the business of the regulatory agencies. They have to take the information that's available. My argument at the very beginning was that I think the understanding of the chemistry of these things may not have been sufficient to prompt the proper questions and get the proper answers.
A brief follow-up, Madam Chair.
Follow-up. Please make it brief.
Yeah, I appreciate your response, but to tether together both the regulatory aspects and the health aspects, if the end goal is to ensure safe drinking water, from a health standpoint, is it not a failure that there's not the strong tether between the regulatory aspects as you articulated?
I'm a big fan of technical skill and expertise. Okay, and I think the more of that we have, given the current situation, the better off we would be. Now, I'm not going to get into the legislation and politics and all of that. I don't know how many of each of these kinds of people you already have. But I think that having proper expertise on board is very important. And I suspect that that may have been part of the problem here.
Representative, is that all?
Yes, Madam Chair, thank you.
Okay. Representative Harrison.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Dr. Penn, for your presentation. I just wanted to follow up a little bit on the science and public health impacts, because as I understand it, you said that PFOA and PFO have been phased out by the manufacturers due to health concerns. As I understand correctly, those health concerns are endocrine disruptor, carcinogens, and immunological compromise, and others. And if I understand correctly, Genex is just a couple of molecules different from PFOA or PFOA, and they have a similar public health impact?
That's an excellent question. there's a number of factors that work there. The persistence in the body appears to differ from compound to compound. It's rather hard to predict just based on structure. I'm not a toxicologist, so bear with me here. We have a lot more data on PFOA and PFOS than we do on Gen X. That does make a difference. There's dimensionality to the health risks there. Some of those health risks have to do with the ability of a particular molecule to bind with a particular receptor on a particular cell. OK? Okay, it's kind of like everybody here has a cell phone or two or maybe multiple email addresses. It's as if Gen X or whatever you want to call it has your phone number. And if it does, it's going to interact with you. And if it doesn't, it may not. We're just beginning to scrape the surface of that cell signaling business. So there's a lot of fundamental knowledge we don't have. And we're forced to fall back on epidemiology, which is looking at sickness after the fact. In other words, using ourselves as guinea pigs. That's a rather poor way to do things. We're getting better and better at this, but we're still a long way from understanding the full range of things that are possible.
Quick follow-up. Thank you. And if I understand correctly, the study that was released last year, Dr. Knapp, if I pronounced that correctly, found a number of problematic chemicals beyond Gen X
yep.
that were hundreds of times
yep.
higher than
right.
what's considered health safe.
Right. I'm not aware of any studies of any of those compounds. I understand that EPA is trying to now look at those three that I named on that list with lots of these. It's going to take quite a while before we have any reliable information on what those things might do to us. We just don't know.
Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Cahoon. And Representative Eiler. Representative Yarborough, are you also wanting to say something? Okay, you could be next.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Professor, thank you for the presentation. We have heard a lot in our area of Brooklyn County about reverse osmosis being the magic answer. And we also have scientists stand up in public meetings and say there's no evidence that reverse osmosis has anything to do with improving the situation. Where do you stand on that? I'll be one of those.
Yeah. Yeah, that's been a hot topic. Reverse osmosis is selective based on the size of a molecule, and that's all it cares about. It's going to exclude molecules larger than things with a molecular weight of about 100. It depends on the membrane. There's different membranes that are used. It's probably going to get most of the bigger compounds out pretty successfully. There are other water treatment technologies. The one that people have been pushing is granular activated charcoal. That works differently. It's not a filter. It works by adsorbing or sticking those molecules to its surface. And so the nature of the molecules makes the difference there. What we do know is that the very small molecules, that PFMOAA compound, you want to look that up on page 2, is small enough that it doesn't bind to granular activated charcoal. That stuff's going to come right through. Okay? So there's more work that needs to be done to figure out how to get the whole cocktail of compounds out reliably. Reverse osmosis is pretty good for most of the things, and it will get much of Gen X out. The activated charcoal will get some of it, but Gen X is not the only compound, so we've got to be mindful that we're dealing with a lot of them. If you're only worried about Gen X, go to reverse osmosis. If you're worried about all of them, we need more work done.
Representative Yarmer.
Thank you for your expertise on this. I don't know if this falls within your area of expertise, but with all of these different fluorocarbons in the Cape Fear River, what, in your opinion, is the source of this wide variety? Is it all coming from the Fayetteville Works? Are there other point sources available? Or do you suspect that there might be concentrations in the river itself that are slowly leaching out?
I think all three. Some of these compounds obviously are coming out of the Fayetteville Works. I mean, they've already said, yeah, Gen X is coming out of our pipes. And I would guess that a significant number of the other compounds that we're seeing, especially the ones at high concentration, because it's a fluorocarbon factory, are also coming out of their discharge. Some of the other compounds, the PFOA and PFOS, which they no longer make, those compounds are present in the environment almost everywhere. All of us in this room contain them. They never break down. They're widely distributed throughout the environment, and they bioaccumulate. They are legacy compounds. They're going to be with us forever, as far as we're concerned. So there would be other sources, and there are numerous sources of PFOS in particular. It's used as a firefighting foam. Okay? So you've got a point source that probably accounts for a lot of them. You've got nebulous sources out there that are going to account for some number of others. And the stuff probably sticks to sediments. So regardless of where it comes from, it's still going to be in the river system for a while. The numbers of Gen X that we're seeing after Chemours stopped discharging everything, which we think took place in late July, those numbers are still up there in the 40 part per trillion range, the last data set that I saw. And that implies that there's probably a residual amount of that stuff slowly percolating out of the ecosystem, the entire ecosystem in the river watershed. It's been saturated with this stuff. It's not going to go away right away. I think we'll see a slow and steady decline towards some background level. These compounds never go away altogether. They just kind of spread out through the entire planet. We're finding PFOA in polar bears, penguins.
Thank you, Dr. Cahoon. And I think Senator Smith Ingram, did you have a question?
Yes. Thank you, Madam Chair. Dr. Cahoon, I want to thank you sincerely for unwrapping all of that organic chemistry for us, those of us who did not make it, remember most of it. I do have a question in light of the additional article that you submitted in support, the article that was released in 2011, Environmental Science Technology. In that article, it explains the future work that is needed, the investigation that's needed in terms of the PFOAs and the PFCs. In light of that article and understanding that a lot of this technology is new, and the various ways that one can be exposed to PFOAs, what exactly, in your opinion, is the law that's being broken by Chemours?
They know that these compounds are toxic. Therefore, they have to report them if they have any reason to believe that they're going to be present at 100 micrograms or liter or higher. They admit that some of those compounds will be present at that concentration or higher, and they don't name them. That's a failure to disclose.
Follow up.
In light of TSCA taking a new regulation in January 21st of 2015 in regards to the alternatives to the PFOAs, in light of the fact that the EPA did not start monitoring that until 2015, how does that date and those new regulations factor in your opinion of the law being broken?
I don't think TSCA is the relative law here. The relative law is the Clean Water Act, and for that matter, the Safe Drinking Water Act as well. TSCA is not about discharge to drinking water. TSCA is about permission to produce. And there are rules about what you're allowed to produce. I've seen the consent agreement about Gen X production in 2009. It says that everybody working in the factory has to wear a respirator, which is a very high standard of personal safety, by the way. It's a big deal. They have to wear gloves that are impermeable. There's a recognition that the stuff is toxic. Okay? But they're allowed to produce it as long as they do it safely. Production is one thing. Discharge is something else altogether. So I would argue that we're looking at a discharge permit, an NPDES discharge permit, whose criteria we're not satisfied here.
Thank you.
Madam Chair,
one quick follow-up.
I just most of you were talking about discharge into the water, but is atmospheric dust deposition also an issue during the manufacturing process and getting carried?
It's going to vary by substance. This HFPO that's been referenced is a gas. That's one reason it's not in your wastewater discharge, okay? Gen X, as I understand it, is kind of a gooey solid. So so it's likely not got much of an atmospheric aspect to it. It does have a boiling point of about 60 degrees centigrade. So if you warm it up enough in an industrial process, you might have some aerial emissions. I really don't know for sure. I doubt that that's much of a problem for that compound. I do not know the physical properties of the other compounds on the list. The smaller ones might very well be volatile as well as soluble. I don't know.
Thank you so much for your time today, Dr. Cahoon. And we really appreciate you coming. Last week, after going public with our questions and concerns on Friday, the co-chairs and I invited Chemours Company to send a representative here today to help the commission both understand the problem we are facing here, but also to take a first step towards being part of the solution. We directed our invitation to Michael Johnson, an environmental manager at Chemours, who had spoken publicly on this matter on behalf of the company. He seemed to have both expertise and a willingness to speak. Chemours' lawyer responded yesterday afternoon, but indicated that neither Michael Johnson nor anyone else from Chemours would be here today. We are disappointed at Chemours' choice, especially because so many of us and you chose to be here today on short notice. Nonetheless, we'll not let their absence today deter this commission in its effort to understand the problem and find a way that North Carolina can help. So with that being said, we're going to now move to our Secretary of DEQ and our Secretary of DHHS, and instead of having them actually give an opening statement, I think we'll move just in sake of time and letting us hear from the public to questions from the committee. They're here today, Senator Jackson.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. At the appropriate time, if it is, I do have some questions for both the secretaries.
Right, let's move right into them. We have lots of people that would like to speak.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Secretary Cohen and Secretary Regan, thank you both for being here. We had all in Father Guthrie, doing Father East, enjoying the beach. This is a serious issue, and we're all taking it seriously. And I have, in listening to some of the comments, especially from Senator Lee and the timeline, my first few questions will be directed to you, Secretary Cohen, if you don't mind. On June 8th, you released that 70,909 parts per trillion was a safe level. Is that an accurate statement?
Secretary Cohen.
Thank you. Can you hear us? So thank you. And just to reference, so yes, on June 8th, it's important to back up to help you understand what our department does. So when either DEQ or a local health department asks us to do a health assessment of a compound, our environmental quality, our occupational environmental epidemiology branch, which has one toxicologist, reviews the available peer-reviewed evidence to try to give some folks a sense of health impact. And so that's what our team did within 24 hours, tried to turn around, and we were very clear at that time saying, like, look, we were just looking at the available peer-reviewed evidence, which is just the beginning of the start of the process. And at that time, I think it's been widely understood now that what we know about GenX is very little. There is very little published evidence. So within 24 hours, we gave that initial health goal. Then we continued to work with state academic partners as well as our federal partners at EPA. We were able to get access to proprietary data that EPA had. Based on that, we have revised the goal to where it stands right now, which is 140 parts per trillion, which is where it stands today. And again, that is a goal that as new studies will come up, we will incorporate that into our thinking in terms of the health goal. If we do have very limited data in setting that goal, but we do have enough, we feel like, to be able to set that goal at this time. So again, we want to continue to have additional science that we would incorporate into that. So yes, that was a quick 24-hour turnaround on peer-reviewed evidence. As we incorporated some of that proprietary data we got from EPA, we were able to reassess what that level of, and we put out an FAQ the day we did that, that goes into a lot of detail on how we use that information, how we take those animal studies, and they are animal studies, and we turn that into a health goal for us.
Is there a follow-up?
Yes, Madam Chairman, there is a follow-up, a couple of follow-ups, if I may.
You may.
Secretary Cohen, thank you for that. I'm still a little bewildered. I mean, you go from 70,909 parts per tree, and then really less than a month later, you come out at 140 parts per tree, and that's a pretty significant drop, in the safe level. So what basis, other than what you have already described, will use to go from that 70,000, we'll just say 71,000 parts per tree, and down to the 140 parts per tree?
Yep. So as I mentioned, those first 24 hours, we used what was published, peer-reviewed data. It was at that time, it was, I believe, one or two studies and some data from Europe. As we were able to work with the EPA and say, what else is out there that isn't published yet that might be able to inform where the public health goal should be appropriately set, they were able to share with us some of that additional information. And I should also make sure to mention at this time that when we're talking about setting those health goals, they are levels at which, if you had 70 years of exposure to Gen X over a lifetime, 70 years is our proxy for lifetime. It's at a level where we want to see no health impact or no adverse event. So we set it at a level, again, as if you were drinking the water for 70 years, at a level of 140 parts per trillion, we would see no adverse events for a bottle-fed infant. Right? So that means as if you were a bottle-fed infant your whole life, which we know isn't. But we want it to be the most health-protective possible. So we build in uncertainty factors. We build in the fact that we want to be protected even for bottle-fed babies, and we want to tell you what that impact is over 70 years. And so that's how we got to that final number where, I shouldn't say final, because there's going to be more studies and we're going to incorporate that, but the current 140 parts per trillion.
Follow-up. Thank you, Secretary Cohen. Just out of curiosity, did you ever consult Secretary Regan or anyone at DEQ on trying to come up with this number?
This is a number that we based on the scientific evidence. I think we've been working very collaboratively because they need to know where the science sits in order to do their work. We need to understand because they're doing the testing, the actual water testing, we do the analysis. So it is a joint team effort here, but those numbers are based on the science and our toxicologists and our epidemiologists use those scientific studies to formulate those numbers.
Okay. Thank you, Secretary Cohen. I appreciate your answers, and again, I appreciate you being here.
You.
Madam Chairman, may I continue with my questions?
I know, Senator Jackson, that you've had a previous engagement for some time, so I'm going to allow that this time.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Yes, but it was important that I be here. This is a very important issue, and I'm hoping we can come up with some solutions very quickly to try and address this situation because, I'm a farmer by trade and nothing's more precious than water. And we want to make sure that it is safe to drink and use and for all of us. Secretary Regan, there's been a lot of discussion back and forth on needing additional funding. And you know that I'm chair of appropriations in the Senate and co-chair. And I'm curious, Chemours has announced that they're going to voluntarily discontinue discharging Gen X into the Cape Fear River, and which I think they should based upon what we're learning now. How will additional funding at the request of $2.58 million, how will that be used to help in this situation?
Sure. And I think it's important for us to sort of put it all in context, which is the first is there's that old Ronald Reagan adage, trust but verify. I think that the company has voluntarily discontinued discharge of Gen X. I think that, or I know it's our responsibility to monitor and be sure that that is actually happening. We've been monitoring on a weekly and sometimes daily basis since this event occurred. And what we've seen is a decline in concentrations in Gen X in the water. I think it's important that we continue to do that monitoring. That monitoring is fairly expensive. Since we launched an investigation and since we have moved aggressively towards the company to be sure we get all the answers we desire, some of the funding that has come to the agency has been provided by Chemours. So we anticipate that that funding will be cut off and that we as an agency will have to find the resources to do the adequate level of monitoring that we would like to do. So that's one answer. The second is this agency has faced cuts for a while now. And one of the things that we're facing is a 40% backlog in our permits, approximately a two-year wait period. One of the things that I've noticed since investigating this is that we don't have adequate staff to focus on these permits or when new materials come in. In this instance, staff made an attempt to reach out to Dr. Canabi and have the conversation about Gen X, but the actual evaluation of that permit was slated for later this summer because it was not prioritized. And again, I think with the new administration coming in, there was nothing in the transition materials or any information that gave us any indication that this was a serious issue. What I can tell you is that as soon as I was made aware, I made some inquiries into my staff, and within a week's time, we jumped into action. I partnered with Secretary Cohen, spoke with the governor's office, and we launched an investigation. And with a short period of time after that, we convinced the company to discontinue the release of Gen X. So I think there's sort of a combination of needs there. There's the ability for staff to close that gap, that 40% gap, because not only do we have a 40% gap and an approximate two-year wait period, when we review all of those applications that's caught in that 40% gap, we need to have adequate time to study, to be sure that there's proper disclosures, there's proper monitoring, so that we don't have any Gen X's or any of these other emerging chemical compounds showing up in these permit renewals and we not be able to adequately address those.
Thank you, Secretary Regan. Nick Fowler. You know, $2.58 million, and I think your budget's for October, federal and state's $207 million.
That's correct.
So, $2.58 million out of a $200-plus million budget, you can't find that. Let's be doing this, addressing this problem.
Well, I can tell you that we have redirected all of our resources for this issue specifically. Prior to that, we've redirected a lot of resources to another emerging chemical compound, 1,5-4-dioxin. Prior to that, we redirected a lot of our resources towards coal ash. This game of robbing Peter to pay Paul at some point will run dry. And so what I would say there is we made a modest request, which is an extension of the request we made in the governor's budget. In the governor's budget, we requested, I think, between 4 and 7 positions for the first year, a total of 7 in the second year, to see if we could help close this gap in terms of looking at our permitting requirements. This time around, we're looking for approximately 16 positions. Many of those are permitters, but many of those are the scientists and the support staff needed to be sure that we have the best permitting program available. And then there's also some additional ask in there for resources to, again, monitor this Gen X situation, but also we are seeing emerging chemical compounds showing up in the state. We want to have adequate resources so we can monitor in those places as well.
Okay. Thank you, Secretary. One more follow-up. I appreciate, you know, you being here, and I'm not trying to agree. This is definitely a bipartisan issue and a problem, and I think we all want to get to it. And so I'm going to give you just some leeway here, as you and I have sat down and had many conversations on budget matters before.
Sure.
What could this request, the $2.58 million, and which, in all fairness, this has never been presented to me. I mean, you haven't contacted me for this. The governor hasn't. So, you know, I've been getting it third hand, so to speak. But if we were to do the appropriation, how do you think that money could be best used to handle the situation here in Wilmington today?
Sure, and you know, what I would say is the attempt or the approach since June, since we've had our budget discussion, and since this issue came about, was to start and begin engaging with the local delegation. And I think that was where sort of the first outreach started to occur. Could we have simultaneously engaged with our budget chairs while we were engaging with the local delegation? Absolutely. But I think that we are where we are now. Those resources, if we were to receive those resources, we would have additional minds, bodies, and focus on not only the Chemours renewal process, but also, again, that 40% backlog, which we would estimate, does not have Gen X contained, but could have emerging chemical compounds of concern that we want to be sure we have an adequate review of. And in addition to that, again, we want to be sure that as we are going through our investigation and trying to determine if there have been any violations, we need adequate resources to be sure that we're monitoring here in the Southeast region, but also as we begin to look at additional permits that require our review, new permits and reapplications, that when we see signs of these emerging chemical compounds, that we can adequately address that permitting process, and if need be, until we make that final determination, have the resources to monitor in those areas as well.
Thank you, Mr. Secretary, and Madam Secretary Kerwin, thank you both for entertaining my question.
Representative Millis.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll try to keep a line of questioning, Madam, very brief, but I do have just two questions that I want to present separately to Secretary Regan. Senator Regan, thank you for the comments that you've shared, and like you, I do also believe in the trust but verify, and I fully concur with a potential company that didn't disclose, and now just because they're telling you that they're stopping discharging, the importance to have the staff and the resources to verify that that is not occurring, not just for the company in our area, but also across the state. So I concur with that statement. But in regards to the budgeting aspects, in which I support many of the underlying principles of such, in terms, for the record, it is my understanding in past budgets, the current budget, proposed budget, that in terms of the Department of Water Quality, the cuts that you mentioned are not relative to the Department of Water Quality, but they're relative to the transfer potentially of cultural resources out of the overall department. Just want to make sure that we're not misleading the public in terms of this very matter of protecting water quality from something that's separate apart in the overall administration of the Department of Environmental Quality as a whole. So if you don't mind clarifying those comments for the record, because it's my understanding that current budget and the proposed budget in 18-19, Department of Water Quality in this purview is unaffected. Now, the question may be whether there's more, and I'm fully happy to entertain that, but we'd make sure we don't want to mislead the public here.
Yes, and so there were cuts made specifically to the Division of Water Resources. There is also a number of reductions that we saw as part of a transfer into another agency. So we have both occurring. What we've done is solely identify the cuts to the Division of Water Resources that disproportionately impact our ability to review these permits. We've taken those numbers and we've looked at what those numbers have done in terms of the reduction that has contributed to the 40% gap in the two-year wait period. So in terms of the numbers that I'm providing, they are solely focused on 16 positions that would go to the Division of Water Resources to begin to rebuild the direct cuts that the Division of Water Resources received.
Mostly, Madam Chair,
follow-up
will most likely be my last question, depending on the response. I think the Secretary has understood in regard to maybe our nonpartisan staff to weigh in. We've asked the same question in regard to the specific requests, and what they've shared with us is a little bit different than what you've shared, but that notwithstanding. The question to you is kind of to piggyback a little bit on the professor from UNCW, who had an excellent testimony to the commission and an excellent Q&A. Regardless of the past, my concern is moving forward and the responsible party, because the cleanup of this is going to impact taxpayers, potentially, and ratepayers, potentially, of Pender, Brunswick, New Hanover, and who knows who else if these other type of chemical cocktails are discovered elsewhere. And so behalf of the taxpayers and ratepayers of the responsible party, I'm very concerned of some of the language that's been shared when it comes to the bifurcation between discharging under our requirement to administer the federal government's Clean Water Act and the TSCA aspects, which has to deal with production. With that said, you know, we saw on the record that you've stated that no law has been broken here. We've also stated that you're not drawing any conclusions. I'm very concerned about the shielding provision of the Clean Water Act and whether your administration feels as if this company and other companies that are probably watching, who may have also not disclosed these chemical compounds, is how this administration is going to handle this company on behalf of the ratepayers and taxpayers all across this state. Do you and your staff believe that Kimmers did not break the law?
Well, and let me give a little bit of context to that statement, because that same day, I've been talking for a while, and the statement that I made was, we are in the beginning stages of an investigation, a very thorough investigation. I might add, I'm probably very impatient, and it's not moving as fast as I would like, and my staff can corroborate that, but nevertheless, I'm of the mindset that we have to measure twice and cut once. So we're in the beginning stages, or at that time, we were in the beginning stages of an investigation. I was also asked the question, what punitive action am I going to immediately take? And what I gave was an answer that was in a snapshot, which was, at that moment, because we were in the beginning effort, I didn't have any evidence that there was any illegal activity and that there had been any compromise of the permit. Maybe more artfully stated, should have been, there may not be any breaking of the law. But it was in that full context that we're in the beginning stages. We just launched this investigation, and at that moment in time, we didn't have any evidence that there was any wrongdoing. But nevertheless, we were moving forward with a very thorough investigation.
Madam Chair, a brief follow-up. Secretary, thank you for that response, and that's comforting to hear. And hopefully that means that the responsible party will be held accountable on behalf of all the taxpayers and ratepayers in the state. But from where you were to where you are today, why has there not been a notice of violation issued to Kimmers in the fact that they have broken the law? In this state, a piece of silt fence breaks and some dirt flows downstream, and individuals are fined up to their eyebrows. What in the world is going on here, Secretary? Why has there not been an NOV issued to this company?
Sure, and that sort of, you know, dovetails back to my previous statement, which is we are going through a very, very thorough investigation. We can't afford any missteps. We need to get this right. And so it's taken a little bit of time. Dr. Cahoon was very accurate when he mentioned this is a very complex issue. This chemical compound is known by a variety of names. I've got decades of information to comb through, starting from the 1980s, to be sure that we understand what was disclosed and how it was disclosed, and if that meets the adequate one. So, you know, I was talking with my general counsel earlier this week. We just got 3,000 pages of information from Kimmers based on questions we're posing to them about what they knew and what was disclosed and how our staff is interpreting all this. So I just want to be certain that folks understand that we are going through a very thoughtful process. We hope that this investigation does not drag on, but we need to take our time. We need to comb through all the information because it's important that we get this issue right.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Secretary Reed, and I hope that justice is served.
Thank you.
Senator Smith-Ingham.
Thank you, Madam Secretary. My first question, I have a few. But the first question is to both Secretaries Coleman and Regan. It is my understanding, as also highlighted by Senator Lee, that Dr. Canapi released his reports and results regarding Gen X in November of 2016. Did either of you receive the information relevant to Dr. Canapi's findings as it relates to Gen X in your transitional documents or any materials when you assumed or were appointed to these positions?
The first time this issue was brought to my attention was in early June. So the answer to your question directly is no. There was no mention of Gen X in any of the transition materials. Again, this issue was not raised to that level by the previous administration. And so as soon as we found out about this issue, we took swift action. And there were a number of steps that we took to take action to be sure that first and foremost that we discouraged the release of this chemical compound. Second, that we put in place monitoring protocols and analysis so that we could verify that the releases were not continuing to occur and that we're trending downward based on the health goals set by my colleague, Dr. Cohen. We also launched into an investigation. And again, there are a series of thoughtful events that we took to be sure that we stopped it. We didn't cause it, but it's our responsibility to fix it. So we wanted to stop it. We wanted to analyze and be sure that it was stopped. And then we wanted to launch an investigation. Dr. Cohen and I also thought it would be very important at the direction of the governor to reinstitute a science advisory board so that we could have peer review over the science and the understanding of what the chemical compound impacts could be on public health. So, although we did not have what I would consider an adequate heads up, we sprung into action immediately, and we're going through a series of events to be sure that we can win back the confidence of the public in terms of the drinking water.
Follow up.
Similarly, at the Department of Health and Human Services, it was not in the transition materials, and our team became aware of it in June, as I explained earlier, and within 24 hours made our, tried to give some folks some context, and then did a much more substantive review of literature and review of some unpublished studies that allowed us to take, to be at the level we are at, the 140 parts per trillion, but the good news that I want to make sure we all focus on is really the great and swift work that DEQ did to make sure that Kemore is no longer discharged Gen X. We watched those levels go down to well below where we set those very conservative levels.
Thank you. Follow up.
Madam Chair, yes, follow up. Secretary Cohen, it's my understanding you only have one toxicologist on staff. And so Secretary Regan has indicated that an additional 16 positions would be needed. If you would you be able to comment further in more detail on what would be necessary in terms of resources and manpower to ensure that we can monitor this very closely and make sure that we, put to the highest priority the welfare of our communities as it relates to this unsafe water?
Secretary Cohen.
Thank you. Thank you for that question, because I am very proud of our small but mighty branch, the Occupational Environmental Epidemiology Branch, one toxicologist for our entire state. And I will say the majority of what our toxicologist does is related to the well water in our state, which half of the folks in North Carolina use well water, about 5 million folks use well water on a daily basis. And in order for a new well to be permitted, our office needs to look at the test results and approve those. So that is actually the majority of what that one toxicologist spends her time on. What we are asking for is a pretty modest ask. It's actually just one additional toxicologist to help us both work on these critical issues as they come up for the state, as well as do the state's business with well water, as well as work with brownfield issues. And so, again, we're only asking for four additional folks, and it's really as we're seeing things evolve, the science evolve, that we want to make sure that we are equipped to do the state's business, and we hope for your support.
Final
follow-up. Secretary Regan, as it relates to the current permitting process, and I understand that there is an initiative that you have wanted to undertake in terms of streamlining that process, but as well as bringing our old outdated system into compliance, do you see a need of additional resources as it relates to monitoring, also in ensuring that our permitting process works efficiently so that we don't have these bad actors out here putting our communities at risk?
I do. I will say that one of the things that was included in my transition materials was information from the North Carolina Chamber. And we talked and have been talking at length about the need to streamline our permitting process well beyond the NPDES permit process. I think the general public might not understand that these permit applications coming to us into the agency in big three-ring binders. If anything comes electronically, it's usually a PDF or something that staff have to physically handle. So the desire to bring the agency into the 21st century and create an electronic aspect to our permitting process is something that we are definitely looking into department-wide.
Chairman Dixon.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It will take just a second to formulate this question. Earlier in the comments by Representative Butler, she mentioned the fact that the department had to fire 70 people. And I think it's important, you know, those are inflammatory type words. And what happened in 2013 budget, we consolidated the Division of Water Quality and Water Resources for consolidation purposes, and that initiated a $2 million recurring reduction. The budget did not specify any FTEs or anything like that. The department chose to reduce those 70 positions, 35 of which were vacant, have In trying to get background for how you would proceed asking for these additional things, Mr. Secretary, have you or would you review that process that happened in 2013 that has resulted in misinformation being out there so that we could avoid situations where a statement is said that they had to fire 70 people when in fact it was a choice and 35 of those positions were already vacant? Have you or would you be willing to look at that as fodder for how we ask for these additional positions?
Sure. I have looked at it and continue to look at it, as Representative Millis mentioned earlier, because of transitions to different departments and different agencies and different divisions. It's really interesting to try to track down all of the losses. What I can tell you is that, and I don't want to speak to the strategy of the previous administration of those who decided to cut where they decided to cut, but the information that I have in my hands, based on what our CFO has provided to me, is we lost 35 positions that were either permitting, compliance, or enforcement. We also lost additional positions that supported that, via strategy, science, and other things. So, you know, that number 70 is not a complete picture of all that was lost. Many of those positions, those 70 positions, were they're no longer there. Whether they were directly fired, whether they were downsized, whether it was natural attrition. What I can tell you is when I walked into the agency, I had a 40% backlog, average 2-year wait period, and not enough staff to get these permits out. Not enough staff to look at these permits for the protection of human health, but also to keep pace with the growing economy. It's well beyond just the reapplication of the industries and businesses that are here. There are lots of industries and businesses that would like to relocate to North Carolina and don't want to wait 2 years for a permit.
Follow-up. Next would be Senator Bishop. I think you're next.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Secretary Cohen, I was struck by something that you said. You said that in the difference between the initial and subsequent risk assessments that came pretty quickly in the order, that the first one was predicated on peer-reviewed information available publicly. And then you became the possession or gained access to, I believe it says, proprietary data, and you also characterized it as unpublished studies. I think you said from the EPA. Is that correct?
That's correct.
And can you characterize what this proprietary data is that had that dramatic impact on your department's risk assessment?
Yeah, these are, I think, as as Dr. Cahoon mentioned, that there are a number of studies that are carried out by individual companies that the EPA contracts with to do particular studies. They are proprietary. They're business, you know, protected information. So the EPA has access to them, so they're able to give us de-identified. So we don't know what company it was or where those that came from, but we're able to use the results of that to sort of factor into our assessment of setting that health goal. And again, these are not human studies. I want to make sure we understand. They're still animal studies that we are basing things on. And you know, the data here is very light. The scientific evidence here is very light. But we feel like we had enough information about Gen X to set the level. And I think important to know that, again, what was really impactful for the health of the folks here was the fact that Chemours stopped discharging the Gen X after DEQ and others pressured them to do that. That was the right thing to do. We set a health goal so someone can understand a 70-year exposure to Gen X. We wanted to give folks an understanding of what 70 years of exposure, what we felt like a proper health goal would be over a 70-year lifetime, which is why we set that. But I think most importantly, that what was important was watching those numbers come down below that health goal. And I actually also want to mention that at the same time, our team looked at the incidence of cancer in this region. We sort of sliced and diced all the numbers of cancer incidents around Cape Fear to see, was there anything unusual? Was there a hot spot? Do we see something? And while not the end of the story, and we want more science here, reassuring that there was not an unusual pattern of cancer. Sort of the same types of cancer patterns that we see in the rest of the state. We know cancer is caused by a lot of different things, smoking, otherwise. But nothing unusual. Now, that's comforting, but not the end of the story. But I think at least helpful to at least have that endpoint. We have a cancer registry. We don't have a registry of a lot of other diseases, but at least for the ones that we do have, we were able to sort of understand whether or not there were any unusual patterns and there weren't. And so I think that's comforting.
Would it be fair to say that the proprietary data that you gained access to dramatically impacted your assessment of the risk?
I think you can see that there was a multiple-fold decrease in where we were at 70,000 down to 140. And again, that was because we wanted to set that level for bottle-fed infants, for the most protective we possibly could be. And so that's where that lower level. We built in an uncertainty factor after that and others. I'm happy to share with you. We lay this all out in an FAQ that is posted on our website about how we went from the animal studies themselves, layer on different factors of uncertainty and protecting our most vulnerable and the lifetime risk and how we arrive at that.
I take it, though, that the proprietary information itself remains proprietary.
Right.
And what did you have to do to gain access to?
That is what our scientists are able to do in working with the EPA. I wish they were able to be more forthcoming in the first 24 hours so we could have one number right away. But this is, as everyone has been saying, a compound that is there isn't a lot of information about. So it took EPA a while to dig around to figure out who had what information. There was raw data that needed to be analyzed, which is what some of our epidemiologists did as well. So it did take some work, not only just identify it, but then analyze it for our purposes here in North Carolina.
Follow-up. Secretary Cohen, if I might. What is the basis for this information that's in the possession of a federal agency being maintained as proprietary if it could have the sort of dramatic impact on your decisions, your risk assessment that you say that it has had?
I'd have to get back to you in understanding what their regulations are, what they're able to keep proprietary, and like maybe Michael knows the answer, Secretary Regan knows the answer better than I do on that one.
Well, I mean, if I need to, I'll look back at General Counsel, but I was sort of perplexed at how hard it is to get access to information from EPA as well. I think as part of the consent decree that the agency signed with the company in 2009, they were able to gain access to confidential business information that the agency is not readily able to share, even with state agencies. At this very moment, as part of our investigation, we are still trying to get access to confidential information that the agency possesses as well as the company. So there are lots of nuances and ways that companies don't have to release information, and we're leveraging all of our resources to see if we can get access to that information.
Follow-up, Madam Chair.
Senator Bishop, I think staff wants to add something to that for you.
So what you just said, Secretary Regan, implies that the information is proprietary. Is information from Chemours or its predecessor DuPont? It's about this company. Is that correct?
Yes.
Follow-up again.
DEQ obviously also has access to this information. If it had the sort of impact on Secretary Cohen's conclusion about risk, why don't you have enough information to issue a notice of violation of the company based on that?
We are gaining access to that information. That's part of our investigation. We've queried, we're looking, you have to know the right questions to ask, and you have to be tenacious, and we're doing both. But we're gaining access to this confidential information. So it's very important that we get our hands on all of this information so we can develop a complete picture as we start to looking at whether this company has done anything in terms of a violation.
Senator Bishop, would you like to hear from staff? They have.
Yes, ma'am. I'm sorry.
Senator Bishop, I was just going to suggest that I suspect that the proprietary nature of the information and being retained by US EPA and not previously shared may have been because of that TSCA really high bar on trade secret and confidentiality. We can investigate that further, but that has been one of the long-time complaints that brought about last year's TSCA reform, is the very binding constraints on US EPA with the company's trade secret information.
Representative Harrison.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thanks to you both for coming. And I'm sorry that Mr. Johnson isn't here, because I would have liked to ask him why, if the client entered into a consent order with the EPA to eliminate the release of Gen X in wastewater and air emissions, it's still been released into the Cape River for the past, I guess, 8 years after that consent order was signed. But as far as I'm going to answer the question, to you two. Something I've been long concerned about in North Carolina is the lack of a good sort of regulatory regime for dealing with toxic chemicals that aren't addressed by the federal level. And it looks like there are lots of problematic chemicals that are in commerce in our air and our water that aren't regulated by EPA. And while TSCA reform improves the situation, it still leaves it pretty wide open for states to address chemicals. And it looks like, as with flame retardants, these perfluorinated compounds, it's like whack-a-mole. They've got public health problems, but then they tweak a molecule, and the next version or generation of the chemical is not regulated. So I guess my question to you both, and I appreciate the information request that you all made with the appropriations attached. After that, do you feel like you can adequately address these emerging compounds? And even if you've got this appropriation that you've requested, you're asking for, I think, additional toxicologists and epidemiologists, do you feel like you have the statutory authority, especially DEQ, to deal with regulating
these problematic compounds. Apologize for the long question.
If I think I understand the question correctly, I think that I'm of the opinion that we do have the statutory authority to move forward, absent some of the nuances that were laid out by the staff. The historical nature of the way we've gone about this is that the EPA has a lot of resources, and they can spend time collecting a lot of information, doing joint studies with academicians all across the country. They are sort of a ready-made entity to get information, absorb that information, set health goals, and then inform the states. That's typically the path forward. Even when EPA has decided not to set a federal standard and we've decided to move on our own, it has been with EPA's data. So it's a huge resource drain for us to try to go it alone. Not to say that we wouldn't, but it's a huge resource drain for us to go it alone. So it's much more than a regulatory question, do we have the authority? It's also, do we have adequate data? And I think there are a lot of data gaps out there that prevent us from moving as quickly as we would like. With additional resources, with the ability to monitor and collect data and have enough staff to have partnerships with the federal government and other states to begin to look at these prioritized emerging contaminants, in addition to the newly constituted Science Advisory Board that will report to both Secretary Cohen and I feel confident that with adequate resources and a joint strategy and a partnership with you all, that we can move forward and do what we need to do to protect North Carolina's water quality.
Committee, this is what the chair is going to rule. We're going to hear like two or three more people from the committee, and then we're going to go to the public hearing because we're going to have to be out of here, and these nice citizens have sat here this whole time to hear the same information we're hearing and learn more about this issue. And it's a very important issue, but we could meet again in September. I'll talk with my co-chairs and see what we can do. But I know that Senator Wells, Senator Representative McElrath, and Senator Sanderson all wanted to say something. Is it burning? Or do you want to go to the public hearing? Who has burning?
I have burning.
Okay, Representative.
It'll be quick. Actually, the first question is to Secretary
Cohen.
No, Regan.
Regan.
Okay. I'm so sorry. Secretary Regan, you were at the EPA before you came to North Carolina. Why do you think that was it the EPA or was it North Carolina that issued a permit to put Gen X in the water in 2009? Why do you think they did that? And are they studying these emerging toxins at all now? And why would it take them from 2009 when they issued that permit till now to know that they issued a permit for something that should not be in the water? I mean, if they're already realizing there's a problem with it and C8 has already been proven to cause cancer, then why would they take a component that is similar to C8 and allow a permit in 2009 for discharge? And I'm not sure if it was the EPA or if it was under the Purdue administration, that administration. It was before. I was here during that time, but I was not.
The last NPDES permit that was issued to this company was issued by the state. Many of the questions that you're asking are questions that we're asking as well as part of our investigation. What I'm comfortable saying is in 2010 and 2015, when the company talked with DEQ directly about Gen X, it was described as a closed-loop process. So the production of Gen X as a product for Teflon and for non-stick non-stick products was discussed in the fashion of a technology that was closed-loop. What we also discovered is a family of chemical compounds akin to Gen X was also being discharged as a byproduct. And so we have a lot of questions about how all of this information comes together and sort of what the agency knew, what was disclosed, whether it was proper or not. And there's a whole host of questions that we are asking the company. And again, I think that it's very important that, as Dr. Cahoon mentioned, that
as we do this investigation, that we don't get sidetracked and just look for Gen X, but we look for all of the chemical compounds in that family or that could be used as a reference to be sure that we understand and have an accurate understanding of what's been discharged and what's in that, that permit.
Quick follow-up. The follow-up is on the testing for the level of the PPT. We're getting that done in Colorado. Is there no one in North Carolina right now that can do that testing? It's only one lab in the United States and one lab in Canada. Is that correct?
That's correct, to my understanding. But EPA has been working with us, and EPA has the ability to do some of this testing. And so we're trying to see if the agency is willing to work with North Carolina, because we seem to be on the cutting edge of this issue and needing to address it. So we're looking at all options, whether we have to pay for it ourselves, whether we can partner with the agency, whether we do a combination of both. Right now, staff is working and all options are on the table.
Senator, may I just real quickly do one more thing? I'm asking one more thing, because it's very important.
Okay.
By someone had mentioned before.
Okay, follow up.
CFPUA, we went out to their site today, and they are doing all kinds of studies, scientific studies, with the filters, with the charcoal, just different studies. And they are, I mean, it was amazing what they're doing. And for someone to say that they should not be included in studying this, I mean, that is, to me, is what is your opinion of that? I think they're in full contact with you, and they're actually working with the University of North Carolina at Wilmington. So, I mean, for someone to say that they should not be involved, that's just, to me, amazing.
No, I would say not just our departments working together, but the local health departments, the water authorities here, get multiple calls a week. I think everyone is really focused on this issue, and it has been a great collaboration. But we are going to need our academic partners here, because, as we keep mentioning, that the science is very light, and do want to keep testing. We want to understand these compounds and their impact on health, but also how do you, are there ways to get these out of water? And we really haven't, you know, we're just at the very beginning of doing that. We're going to need all the help we can get in order to do that work, because we want to make sure that we're getting the right science to help us guide to the solution.
Thank you very much. Yeah.
Senator Sanderson, you haven't said anything, so you won't try to make it quick.
Yes, just thank you, Madam Chair. Just one very quick question. Secretary Regan, you have indicated, and I appreciate what you indicated as far as wanting to bring more people on staff to step up monitoring and continue the monitoring to eliminate backlog of permits. But when we began this meeting, we heard from both our local representatives, our state representatives, and I'm sure you're getting ready to hear a lot more from the public comment. That is a conversation that needs to be had with the folks, believe me. I want to know what is necessary to ensure that these folks in Wilmington and surrounding county have safe drinking water for the next 30 days, that monitoring in the future or bringing more people on staff in the future may not sweat.
Sure, I think that the first thing I would say is demanding that the company not discharge any additional units. Making sure that we are monitoring to be sure, again, that they're not actively discharging. But it's also very important for both agencies to understand, as that trend continues to come down, the time that it takes and what may be needed to potentially expedite that. I think it really is important, though, to note that Secretary Cohen has outlined the process for setting those health standards, which are the most protective. So what I would say is we're looking at these very protective health goals. We're also looking at this chemical compound, the concentrations on the continual decline. And it is our goal to make sure that those numbers come down as quickly as possible.
Okay, Senator Wales, you've been very patient. You haven't spoken, so.
I have a couple comments to lead into some questions for Secretary Regan. I came down. I know some folks have waited to speak, but I also drove 4.5 hours to get here. I told the Highway Patrol what time I'm here for two reasons. One, Senator Lee has made it abundantly clear over the last few weeks and months how important this issue is to this community. So I'm going to do whatever I can to help him. But there's another reason, and I'm wondering what's going on in the Catawba Basin and the news and all the other 13 basins in North Carolina. And are we dealing with this, or is there a structural problem? Secretary Reagan, you and your folks have been great at reaching out to me since you hit the door, and y'all are responsive, and I appreciate that. I would point out that I've been in the General Assembly less than 5 years, and you were my third Secretary of DEQ. We politicians come and go, but bureaucrats and lobbyists are forever. And I've got a real question about whether we've got some structural issues. So this, my questions are not about you, but about those people that you are responsible for and how well they're doing their job. As I understood your question, you didn't hear about GenX until June of this year.
That's correct.
But what we saw from the timeline is that Professor Knappy sent a published study to 19 individuals at DEQ in November of 16, and that he met with representatives from DEQ in April of 2017, and yet you weren't told about it until June of 2017.
It's my understanding that our staff did not meet with Dr. Knappy until June of 2017.
Okay, so the timeline may be a question.
Yes.
But 16 individuals in DEQ did hear from Professor Knappy, or excuse me, 19 individuals in November 23rd, 2016.
That's my understanding.
Did those individuals happen to share that information with anybody else in DEQ or anywhere else?
My understanding is the individuals that were on that email received Dr. Knappy's study and were hoping to talk with Dr. Knappy and wanted to better understand exactly what the study meant. Again, there is so little information known about GenX. I don't think the existing staff that are currently there, the leadership that has since moved on, it was not on anybody's radar. So there was a lack of understanding of what this GenX chemical compound is. And what I would say is that based on conversations with staff, based on priority issues, this was going to be something that they were going to revisit as they got to it.
Do any members, do any of those 19 individuals still work at DEQ?
Yes.
Still there?
Yes.
The ones that did not understand the seriousness and pass it on to you. It's been suggested by today and previously by others that there was some conspiracy to withhold this information from the transition team and from you. And yet, the folks that knew about this issue are still employed at DEQ.
I don't want to speak to conspiracy. I've had really good conversations with the staff. I think that our senior staff have been continually asking very good questions of the staff. I think the real question is, and as part of our investigation, was there an adequate disclosure and understanding of GenX and the chemical compound names that are listed or not listed in the permit? I think that that's a real question, and I think that our investigation will get to the bottom of
it. Well, it is our intention to get to the bottom of it. That's part of what we have to do here. So we're going to address the issue here, but we're going to do it in a way that addresses the issue across the state of North Carolina.
Yes. We would now like to move to the public hearing part, and I want to thank the public. You've been very patient, and we will be in this building until 6 o'clock if it takes that long. And I would ask that you keep your comments to 2 minutes, shorter if you like. But our sergeant at arms will call the name. Please line up at the podium. When you get to the podium, give your name, where you live, and go ahead and make your statement. Ready?
Ms. Chris Endo, coming up. Ed Abelard, Chris Anderson, James Wright, Madison Polera, and Aaron Casey.
And if you want to also give written statements, go ahead and turn those into the sergeant-at-arms, or you can go online, as I told you earlier today.
Speakers, you'll get a one-minute notice from the timer to my left, and then he'll hold the stop sign up, and please limit your comments.
2 minutes. Senator Wayne, Representatives Brady and Dixon. My name is Chris Endo. I live in Wilmington, North Carolina, out of county, and I'm a member of the Cape Fear Group of the Sierra Club, 1,218 members strong. Citizens of the coastal plain of North Carolina are hardwired to investigate threats to the coast's lavish water resources. From coal ash to CAFOs and now Gen X, we turn to regulatory agencies when we are informed about degradation of our waters. Hence, my ask to the Environmental Review Commission focuses on the Department of Environmental Quality, which, because of the Clean Water Act, has the power to protect and restore local and statewide water resources for the state use, safe use of all citizens. We request that the Environmental Review Commission improve staffing at DEQ regional offices, where staffing has been cut by 41% since 2010, and revise the 2017-18 state budget to reflect more generous funding for DEQ. If funding isn't increased, DEQ will have to reduce spending by $1.8 million. Gen X has united the citizens of the Cape Fear watershed in a campaign to restore and protect our river, but our mission cannot succeed without the support of the Environmental Review Commission and the legislature. Remember, in 1972, a long time ago, the North Carolina Constitution was amended, the so-called Green Amendment, to empower state and local governments to protect our air and water from pollution. We trust that the public hearing will provide the evidence the Commission seeks to act on the Gen X debacle and regain the public's confidence in the state's role of protecting the environment and the health of its citizens.
Good afternoon. My name is Ed Ablard. I'm moved here in December of 2012 from Alexandria, Virginia. During the last couple of years that we were in Alexandria, the Center for Disease Control in Atlanta came to us with a report that condemned the coal-fired power plant to history. And so I stayed around until they actually tore out the guts of the power plant so it could start up again, and moved down here where I am now faced with another catastrophe. And I've got to tell you, Mr. McGrady, I've never met you before. I understand you've got a great rating with the conservationists, and you work very hard on leachate. But I think this is, and I'm not convinced by anything that's come across the podium or from the chairs, that you're in control of this situation. I think that you're misdirecting resources to try and find out what went wrong when you ought to be asking for help from the CDC, Center for Disease Control in Atlanta, to find out how we get this out of our water and out of our children. It's not helpful for Secretary Cohen to say, well, we haven't got a problem with cancer here because it's the same as the rest of the state. Well, it's probably the same water conditions all over the rest of the state. But what we do have here in Wilmington, which is documented by the health department, is we've got fat kids. The fat kids go to school, elementary school fat. And that is an indication of endocrine disruption. So, Mr. Dixon, I took great offense to your opening statement. All we're going to pay attention to is number 70. You want me to stop?
Yes, sir. I'm sorry, that's 2 minutes.
I want one more. Half a minute.
No, I'm sorry, it's 37 other speakers, sir. You can end it right now with 1 sentence.
Suzanne Brander of the university sent an email, which I've conveyed to the governmental officials behind us, which reveals that endocrine disruption is the major threat from this set of chemicals. Sweden has set a combined limit in their chemistry analysis of these chemicals of 90 parts per trillion, which is lower than what she said.
We're going to have to have you wrap up.
Way off base here.
Just send them to us in written comments if you have others to make. We'll be glad to read them.
Ms. Anderson?
I'm going to get you going because I thought we had 3 minutes. So this Gen X crisis has brought protecting our water to the forefront. As the facts have slowly been made available to us, we've heard requests for money, for more training, studies, staff at DEQ. It's been suggested that discharge permit applications were unclear because of industry jargon and trade names and were approval process because staff were not trained or educated enough fully to understand them. My question is simple. If that is the case, that DEQ staff were not trained to be competent to approve these permits, why in the world would the Cape Fear Public Utility Authority hire Robin Smith, who was in charge of DEQ at the time these very permits were approved, to do their internal audit for the Gen X investigation? Robin Smith was appointed Assistant Secretary to the Environment at Dinger from 1993 and served until 2013. She was directly responsible for permitting of discharges to surface waters. According to her own biography on the National Association of Chief Executive Officers, Robin Smith oversaw development of major policy initiatives for programs having such diverse responsibilities as permitting of discharges to surface waters, issuance of air emissions permits, implementation of major grant programs for wastewater and drinking water projects, remediation and contamination of soil and groundwater, preventing of coastal development, and animal operations. It was unclear her purview that the permits for Gen X and numerous other toxins were approved to be dumped into our waterways. Why would our utility authority select Robin Smith to conduct its independent internal audit? Someone so intimately tried to the issue that no one could reasonably expect to be objective. This is nothing more than an attempt by the people responsible for this crisis to cover it up. We cannot blame Chemours for this crisis.
Could you please state your names when you come up?
James Wright, Citizen Wilmington. I had some written notes. I'm a terrible public speaker, but I took cotton on my mouth, so hopefully stumbled through this. So, I'd like to thank Mr. Knappy first for bringing this to the attention of the public, because without him, this wouldn't have been stopped, and nobody would have known about it, in concert with the Star News. The lack of notice by Chemours and the CFPUA is as concerning as the actual discharge that was taking place. And I think some other people have said, given some reasons why maybe the CFPUA should not be directly involved. Unregulated chemicals or regulated chemicals, discharging those into waterways where people are going to be consuming them is not a good idea by anybody's stretch of the imagination, I don't think. Here in Wilmington, the economic impact could be things like property values. Locally here, we have a burgeoning craft brewing industry. Actually, shipments across the state have been returned to Wilmington because since the Gen X came out, so there's a direct impact on that economically. Chemours should be required to become a zero discharge as their permit says they are. They should be required to pay for any treatment facility upgrades throughout the whole entire basin region. They should be quite required to maintain those treatment facility upgrades and also make upgrades to those facilities as demand increases in the future. This should be a perpetual thing they're required to do. As legislators under, I believe, Article 14, Section 5 of the North Carolina State Constitution, y'all took an oath to protect the environment of the state of North Carolina. So y'all do have a duty to make sure this is taken care of and done properly. And I also think that the permitting process, talk about opportunities here, the taxpayers are the victims here. They shouldn't be paying for this. The corporations should be paying for this. So you should tie the permits to funding for Department of Environmental Quality and DHHS so that the chemical companies pay, again, in perpetuity, forever, to fund their the state divisions that will monitor them to make sure they don't pollute and hurt us. Thank you.
You did a good job, Neil. Could you give us your address? You did great on public speaking today.
I have it on a piece of paper here.
Just as long as the Sergeant Arms can do. Thank you.
After the next two speakers will be Richard Lang, Mara Black, Dana Sargent, and Ellie Twine. Please line up.
Good afternoon, representatives and senators. Thank you for your time and attention. My name is Madison Polera. I have a Master's of Science degree in Marine Biology from UNCW with a focus in freshwater conservation and management, where I research toxins in the Cape Fear River. I'm also an employee of Cape Fear River Watch and represent them here. We're here to talk about the safety of drinking water for 300,000 people. Every single man, woman, and child, regardless of political affiliation or beliefs, drinks water every single day. However, most do not fully understand the story of Gen X and the multiple classes of per- and polyfluorinated compounds found in our finished drinking water. Not everyone understands the risk associated with Gen X. Not everyone has options for clean, safe drinking water. We need to ensure that all people, regardless of race, color, national origin, education, or income, has access to healthy environment and influence over development, implementation, and enforcement of environmental laws, regulations, and policies. Environmental justice will be achieved when everyone enjoys the same degree of protection from environmental and health hazards and equal access to the decision-making process to have a healthy environment in which to live, learn, and work. Our people deserve a voice, our children deserve clean drinking water, and our city deserves a sustainable economy. We have the opportunity to create a new beginning with a mind shift on how we approach industry pollution and environmental issues. Clean drinking water is not a partisan issue. This is a public health and safety and economic issue. Chemours and DuPont have been allowed to discharge an unregulated chemical without being required to prove that it is safe to be in the drinking water supply for hundreds of thousands of people. This has resulted in this entire community being treated like lab rats, while Chemours and DuPont hope that the same health effects like cancer and endocrine disruptors attributed to its predecessor don't happen. This is wrong. We must stop the discharges at the source before they start. The emphasis must be on precluding the release of chemicals into the river. It is not the responsibility of the public to filter out their pollution. DEQ must be adequately funded so they can enforce the proper permits, understand the processes happening within these industrial manufacturers, and keep all of us safe without the public having to bear the economic burden. I'll roll.
Now, please don't applaud. You've been a great, great group today. Please don't.
Good afternoon. My name is Erin Carey, and I'm the Coastal Programs Coordinator for the North Carolina chapter of the Sierra Club. I'm here today on behalf of our 70,000-plus members here in North Carolina and supporters, all of whom are very concerned about water quality in our great state. And I'd like to thank you all for taking the time to come and speak with those of us who are directly impacted by Gen X. I've been a resident of this area for 20 years plus, and I understand how deeply personal this issue has become for all of us. As a spokesperson for the Sierra Club, I ask you to provide DEQ and local governments the support they need to monitor and protect water quality and examine how to deal with emerging contaminants like Gen X. But as a resident who recently discovered that there are industrial chemicals in my drinking water, I implore my local representatives to please take the lead in this effort. Gen X is a wake-up call. It's one that should remind us how important it is to protect our water. We cannot allow myriad and largely untested industrial and agricultural discharges into our drinking water sources and hope that everything will be okay. The Department of Environmental Quality has a difficult job, both in protecting the waters of the state and managing the thousands of permits that fall under its purview. But right now, today, we need to better understand Gen X. We need to understand the potential impacts on the residents of this area, on our aquatic species, and really in the environment as a whole. I ask that you support the governor's requested appropriation for DEQ and DHHS that our state scientists and health officials to begin the task of addressing Gen X and ensure safe drinking water, not for just those of us who are impacted here in Wilmington and around the area, but across the state. And looking forward, we hope that the legislature will work with the administration for a plan for North Carolina to be better prepared for these contaminants.
Thank you.
Richard Lang, Mara Black, Dana Sargent, Ellie Klein, Peter Gilman, Brian, and Emily Don.
Please state your name and address when you
My name is Mara Black, and I have an auditory problem, so if somebody can tell me if I'm too loud or too soft, it would help. I got sick in Richmond, Virginia, working for a Fortune 100 company, where I was an industrial engineer from NC State, Dean's List student, and have an MBA. I spent 20 years building mathematical computer models of entire factories. I came to North Carolina to get well. I bought a home. You let me down, North Carolina. I trusted North Carolina and moved here trusting with my health and my money. Everyone had to fail and fall asleep on the job for this to happen, in my opinion. We don't need jobs badly enough to have Teflon or stain-resistant carpet if it contributes to any negative health of anyone here. It's just not that important. We can become an IT center or anything else. DuPont and Chemours cannot be trusted. This trust but verify business works when someone doesn't break your trust. We have to think about Parkersburg. Here's what I need to feel safe. I need clean water now. I need to take a clean shower. Clean. We need to sample water continuously. We need to stop all discharge, and they need to prove. The onus needs to be on them to pay for it. Yes, we need more. We need the state to monitor, but it should be paid for by the companies if they want to be in this state. Somebody mentioned no proof of cancer increase. I have here from cancer.org proof that there is, in fact, a thyroid cancer increase and a bladder cancer increase in this state, and I will be personally using my statistical background to put health information together, and I may get it published. We need to be free of toxins. If I have to, I will take my tax money and move elsewhere, but I will still continue my work on this project. Thank you.
My name's Dana Sargent. I'm a resident of Wilmington, North Carolina, and a mother of two girls. I'd like to welcome the commissioners to the Cape Fear region. Here, protecting the environment beyond all the obvious benefits is also vital to sustaining our economy and our culture, which both rely on protecting and restoring our unique natural resources. It was disheartening for me to learn that the commission does not accurately represent the morals of about half the population of North Carolina, being that there are only four Democrats. I guess that issue, though, belongs in comments on redistricting this gerrymandered mess that is our state. I was also alarmed to learn that 17 of the 20 members received lifetime scores between 0 and 37% from the NCLCV's environmental scorecard, which analyzes your voting records. Excuse me. Been drinking Gen X, I'm a little ill, on environmental issues. Most of you have supported legislation to gut environmental laws and program funding under the auspices of limiting so-called excessive regulations on industry and saving state funding. That's fake news. Those of us paying attention know that health and environmental costs of underfunding these programs far outweigh any short-term budgetary benefit, and that the real reason for any legislative action threatening our environment and our health is done solely for the purpose of coddling corporations. Your constituents are paying the price for your dirty dealings at many levels. I met a father at a rally last week whose daughter has an extremely rare form of cancer that has been linked to compounds similar to Gen X. Are you willing to tell that little girl you need to gut these programs so you can make it easier on a billion-dollar Fortune 500 company to increase their profits? In a perfect world, companies like DuPont and Chemours would not knowingly give cancer to kids. But we don't live there. They don't regulate themselves. It's mandatory that our governments regulate them for us. Your days of sucking up to corporations are numbered. Neither Republicans nor Democrats will continue to stand by and allow you to use us as pawns for political or corporate profit. We learned the Assistant Secretary for the Environment at DEQ under the McCrory administration, Tom Reeder, who is now a paid assistant to Senator Bergen, received an email in 2016. Thank you. I request two things. One, that the commission fund our regulatory agencies and scientists to have the funding and the time to properly assess the health effects of these compounds. And two, our legislative bodies have time to update the laws to give the state more power to regulate and monitor industries that pose a threat to our government and our public health. Our government and public health should be given priority over political gain and corporate profit.
You're taking time from speakers when you applaud. Wave your hands in the air or just be as quiet as you can so we want to hear what the public has to say.
My name is Ellie Klein. I live in Wilmington, North Carolina. And I echo much of what Dana said. I'm not going to start by telling a heartrending story as the first two elected official speakers did. I'm a simple person. I drink the water. I don't drink the Kool-Aid. Water not only is a public right, safe water involves our safety and our security. We know all over the world how important water is and how wars are fought because of the lack of good water. You say that water is not political, this issue is not political. I question that, and there are two terms that I would like to put out. One is mendacity, the other is veracity. To me, it's mendacious when you exclude one of our important representatives. When you do that, you are dissing the rest of us who she represents. Two, when you call out our current administration and you don't call out the public utility when one of our commissioners actually served on that commission and had to have known, and if he didn't know, I mean, talk about not being qualified when the public authority doesn't have the knowledge or can get the knowledge to understand reports that were given. To me, that's outrageous. I'll cut my remarks short. I just would ask you, you know, we can do two things at once. Fund what the governor has requested, and two, include the public utility in their involvement and include our educational systems. But you don't have to make a choice between one or the other. Just do what's right, please.
After these two speakers, Effie Sparrow, Sue Mentees, Elizabeth Bryant, Daniel Zelenton.
Thank you, Commissioners, for making the trip to Wilmington today. My name is Peter Gilman Bryant. I'm a 40-year resident of New Hanover. And I work for the Surfrider Foundation as a water quality coordinator. But I have no science background. I'm a historian. I got an A in organic chemistry, but still remains bewildered and traumatized.
That's good.
I'll cut right to the chase. We all want water that is untainted by industrial contaminant. Untainted by industrial contaminant, and we want to guarantee that water will remain. claim I'm tainted by industrial contaminant. I see great purpose in going ahead and funding the governor's request. We have two agencies in place already with some expertise and set to undertake the efforts needed to guarantee that water supply. I see no purpose in trying to reinvent the wheel. And we could, and certainly we can use local agencies as adjuncts, but to bring the study down here and reinvent that wheel would be lengthy. I see it being more expensive than $2.5 million funding. So once again, I just request that you honor the governor's proposal. Thank you very much.
After Ms. Dobbin, Effie Sparrows, Sue Menzies, Elizabeth Bryant, Daniel Zelatin, Robert Cutters, Susie Kane, Myla Giles. If you're here, please come up and get in line.
My name is Emily Donovan. I live in Brunswick County, and I am the mother of two children. I would like to remind you that these toxic chemicals are not just in Wilmington's water. They are in my water in Brunswick County, too. And anyone who gets raw water from the Lower Cape Fear Sewer and Water Authority is forced to drink this cocktail of PFAS being dumped by Chemours. So with all due respect to the Senator from New Hanover County, Senator Lee's proposal to give funding to CFPUA as a replacement of DEQ seems rather self-serving. And as a resident of Brunswick County, I'm not okay seeing tax dollars used in such a conflicting way. I'm curious why Dr. Canapi is not here. Was he invited? If not, why? He can answer all your questions about point source for PFOSs, 1,4-dioxane and bromide treatment options, etc. Also, are you currently testing for all the other perfluorinated chemicals in our water? Can you tell us if Chemours has stopped discharging all those other PFOSs? Do you know if these other toxic chemicals are safe to drink? Do you know the toxicity of these mixtures, the margin of exposure for me and my family? I'm also a parent. I've raised my children on this water, water with high levels of endocrine disruptors, and I'm about to send my children to school for 6.5 hours a day. I imagine many of you support school choice. Then you should also support parents' right to choose an alternative source of water at school that doesn't contain toxic chemicals. My children are privileged enough to have access to that choice because I can afford to send them to school with clean, safe water. But what about those who are less fortunate? Which brings me to my last point. I'm also a youth director at a local church. And as a Christian faith leader, Jesus taught me to give voice to the voiceless and to defend the least of these. I can afford an alternative source of water for my family, but many of your constituents cannot. We have a moral obligation to protect all human life. The technology exists for Chemours to remove those toxic chemicals from the Cape Fear River. The state of North Carolina has the money to fund stronger protections for us. It sounds like the state of North Carolina has the power to create emergency grants for clean drinking water within our schools. I guess my real question to each of you today is, do you have the moral courage to do the right thing? And I certainly pray that you do.
Madam Chair, members of the Commission, thank you for coming to Wilmington. My name is Robert Cutting. I'm the parent of two sons who have drunk nothing but river water from the Cape Fear since 1990 when we moved here. I don't want to belabor the same points, but I will say thank you for coming to Wilmington, where you can see the result of some of the policies of the last several years. We're talking budget cuts. We are talking about eliminating the science. We are talking about repealing laws for the health and safety of the population under the guise of saving money. Well, I think we can all see now that there's a lot more money being spent for proceedings like this by the Public Utility Authority, by DEQ, and by potentially all the victims. I mean, my children still do not know whether Gen X is the fountain of youth or whether it's another Camp Lejeune. And from the data that's available today, I don't think anyone knows that. How did that happen? How does this stuff get into the water? Well, I have some bad news. We've studied this for over 25 years. This is only one of the many substances that's involved. And as those substances are allowed out into the environment, very little testing is required. We have tens of thousands of materials like Gen X. Cape Fear River Watch estimates there are 800 some chemicals in the Cape Fear River alone. We cannot be lulled into thinking, because your responsibilities are much bigger, that Gen X is what we're really here talking about. This is the approval process and the release of chemicals into the environment. We are subsidizing lower cost waste disposal. We are allowing industry to dispose of waste into your private property and into our public property without cost and with very little in the way of study. So here are my recommendations. One is, more science is necessary. It's got to be funded. Number two, exercise vigilance over existing facilities. I was in law enforcement, no cop, no stop. Thank you. Lobby Congress for more rights and protect private property rights. That's what we're talking about here.
Thank you, sir.
Hello, my name is Daniel Zielinski. I'm a one-year resident here in Wilmington. I relocated from the big city, or I should say a larger city, of Chicago. I come from regulations. I come from enforcing regulations. I was the chief inspector for a village in the western suburbs for over 14 years. I was given the opportunity to speak because I've been watching you folks do the political dance. It's not me, it's them. It's not us, it's ours. It's a Republican, nope, it's a Democrat. No, it's all our fault. No, it's none our fault. Even lambasting this person right here about why he doesn't go, why is there a two-year limit, backlog on permits, why he doesn't have the staff to adequately look at the permits and see if they're legitimately okay to do. You folks cut the staff. You folks cut it. You, every single one of you have a hand in this. And it is not this person right here. This person came along to try to fix it. And with this, with everything that's going on in this damn country, pardon my language, of getting rid of regulations, we can't get rid of regulations. And the one thing I'd like to mention, I was an inspector. I enforced the National Electric Code for 14 years. Every state, every town, every department can make everything better than the laws. Everybody says, ooh, the EPA. EPA is a baseline. Every community and every state can make it above what the EPA says by just writing it into their laws. Have the courage, folks. Have the courage to stand up and not kill me. I want to drink some water. That's not going to kill me. I am a chronic kidney patient. I came here to extend my life, not to end my life. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you. My name is Mike Giles. I work for the North Carolina Coastal Federation. We represent over 15,000 members, but what I really represent is everybody who loves the coast. Clean water, the Clean Water Act. Fishable, swimmable, and most important, drinkable water. That's required by law. It's time for the Environmental Resources Commission to get with our local, all of our local representatives, work together. Let's don't bring politics. Everybody has had something to say here that's been important. Every citizen, everything they had to say is important. It's not just Gen X. It's not just all these chemicals. It's polluted stormwater. It's feces from millions of hogs up in our Northeast Cape Fear and Cape Fear River Basin. All those materials are coming down. We're at the end of the pipe. We're drinking our treated water. The Cape Fear Public Utility Authority is treating everybody's waste from Durham, Moncur, Pittsburgh, and Chapel Hill. It's all coming down here. So what I urge you all to do is work together, do what's right, provide the funding that's necessary, because our population is not diminishing, it's growing. It's growing across North Carolina. Growing at the coast because everybody wants to live here. You know what? Everybody wants to live here at the coast because they want to live near clean water. Please put this on a tight time frame. If we have another meeting, I would suggest we do it in a larger building. We have plenty of facilities in New Hanover County that can accommodate more people. There were people outside that could not get in. Thank you.
Susie Kane, Myla Giles, Tyler Newman, Natalie English, John Boker,
Susie Kane, and I live in Wilmington, and I'm very proud. I'm proud of Mr. Lee, Mr. White, Mr. Sappo, whom I don't even know, for seeing this problem as not a Republican problem or a Democratic problem, but water is life. And that was just my, that's all I want to say. I have two questions, and I don't know the answers to them. And one of the questions is talking about the manufacturing and producing for permits. I wonder, does that include farm waste? Is that considered industry or not? And because I think that's kind of important, but I don't know. Maybe it does.
Ma'am, this is just to hear your comments, but I'm sure one of our representatives or senators will be glad to get with you after the meeting.
Well, the other comment is that on the internet, I looked up Kenmore, and they pay $450,000 a year for a lobbyist. And I'm wondering, what are they lobbying for?
My name is Tyler Newman. I'm with BASE, which is Business Alliance for a Sound Economy. We're a regional business advocacy organization. I work in Brunswick, New Hanover, Pender, and Onslow counties. I wanted to thank you all for convening in Wilmington, and I wanted to thank our local elected officials for their leadership on this issue. I think you'll note the three rows of folks behind me, Republicans, Democrats, sitting together. They sat in this room with the governor, and it really coalesced around this issue. Having safe and clean water is critically important, but we need the best data to make the best decisions. We will continue to be reliant on the EPA, DEQ, DHHS to provide knowledge and expertise and have a clear regulatory process. Their rules and regulations are the law of the land, and we rely on their experiences across the U.S. to determine potential threats to the water supply. It is important that we have a clear understanding of permitting, potential contaminants, and regulations. It was interesting to me to hear the Secretary talk about challenges to the permitting process and how applications come in. Moving forward, we encourage your continued leadership on this complex topic. Thank you.
Okay, Myla Giles, Natalie English, John Boker, Jason Stevens, Deb Carter, Rob Zappel, please line up.
Hi, I'm Natalie Haskins-English. I have the honor of being the President and CEO of the Wilmington Chamber, so I'm making the official welcome to you all. Some of you are familiar faces to me because I've been in the advocacy lobbying business for a really long time, and I'm proud of the work that I've done representing our business community across the state. Historically, our river has served as critical infrastructure, supporting shipping, the port, power generation, jobs, and water needs, while also enabling a thriving recreational function and serving as a centerpiece for Wilmington's downtown. This is not and cannot be an either-or conversation. It is not whether we have safe water or great jobs. It's got to be both. We have to have safe water, and we have to have great jobs for our citizens. Among its many benefits, the Cape Fear River provides a crucial water source for our region and is vital to future prosperity. We applaud the actions of the EPA, DEQ, and DHHS, and those of Governor Cooper, to ensure that the agencies involved maintain a rigorous yet urgent process to drive improved clarity as quickly as possible. Like others, I add my appreciation to the local delegation and local elected officials for the positions that they've been taking and their pushing of others to address this issue. Until more is known about the compound, we are pleased that Kenmore's is capturing, removing, and safely disposing of wastewater containing the byproduct Gen X. We support and join the community's quest for a better understanding of the issue at hand. Major employers in this region are following strict guidelines and are consistently recognized for their environmental stewardship. Those companies are doing the best they can under current laws and regulations to protect our air, water, forest resources, and wildlife habitats. Those companies employ thousands of our friends and neighbors, and that's a statistic that we have to keep in mind. To grow and diversify our regional economy and that of the entire state, having an industrial and manufacturing component is absolutely necessary. As we move forward, we encourage the discussion regarding the Cape Fear River to be based on facts answering the questions at hand, and ensuring that our community's future is not negatively impacted by potential contaminants or rhetoric that isn't positive or productive towards solutions. We support funding adequate agencies, appropriate agencies to do the work. We support your work here, and we ask you to continue to do so. We thank you again so much for visiting us here and hope you'll come back again.
I'm Dirk Carter. I'm director of the North Carolina offices of the Southern Environmental Law Center in Chapel Hill. First, I want to thank you for coming to Wilmington and hearing from these citizens who every day have to worry about something that we all should be able to take for granted, which is the safety of our drinking water. I hope, and the Southern Environmental Law Center hopes, that this will begin a reflection on your part on the 6 years of environmental assault that this General Assembly has waged on our water quality protections, our air quality protections, and our agency that's charged with protecting drinking water and the rest of our state's environment. It's time to turn the corner on this. We can't tolerate anymore. It was not a surprise to us when this came to light that Kenmore's permit was expired, because as the department has reported, 40% of the state permits for water quality have expired. In 2012, this General Assembly passed a law prohibiting the state from adopting an environmental regulation more protective than the minimum federal standard, whatever that may be. So we have a need in this state to protect against something like Gen X. It handcuffs our state agency. On August 3rd, after this had come to light, the Senate, many of you were either sponsors or voted for this, passed House Bill 162. That bill says if the burden on a polluter is a certain level, the state agency is prohibited from enacting an environmental regulation to protect the public's drinking water. In determining what that cost is, you prohibit the agency from considering the public benefit. So if you apply that to Gen X, and it costs $100 million for the company to get Gen X out of the water, and the public benefit is $800 million, this state agency can't enact that regulation. That's wrong, and you need to repeal that law and let it die a merciful death in the House. Thank you.
All right, after Mr. Zappel, Jason Stevens, John Boker, Rick Catlin, Don Tulan, Sandy Lawrence.
Well, I know you probably thought I was going to be the last one there for a minute. Good afternoon. My name is Rob Zappel. I'm one of the New Hanover County Commissioners here. And at first, I'd like to thank you for your patience. It's been a very long afternoon. Also, thank you for Madam Chair, and Commission members, thank you for convening here in New Hanover County and for taking the tour of the CFPUA's Sweeney Water Treatment Plant to get a better and deeper understanding of the concerns about water quality and problems we face as a community and as a region. I'd like to focus my comments on the local problems that we face and the investigatory mission of this committee. Reinforcing Dr. Cahoon's comments, there are additional sources and types of discharge that have surfaced during the discussion of Gen X, C8, and the other unnamed perfluorinated chemical compounds that have been identified through sampling and testing of our drinking water. These are contributing sources to the contamination and need to be evaluated, monitored, and addressed as a part of the thorough investigation of water quality issues affecting the Lower Cape Fear region. The first is the contamination of the soils, drinking water wells, crops, and tributary streams that feed the Cape Fear River through the practice of biosolids application on agricultural lands in New Hanover County and surrounding counties. Currently, the Cape Fear Public Utility Authority operates the Northside Wastewater Treatment Plant that treats the wastewater of commercial and residential customers. The solid waste that is left over after treatment is known as sludge or biosolid material. This biosolid material has been saturated with water from the same Cape Fear River sources as we get our drinking water, and the contaminants, Gen X, C8, and the other perfluorinated chemical compounds, and are concentrated in the material. And as we found to be the case in Decatur, Alabama, along the banks of the Tennessee River, when that community faced a similar issue that we are confronted with here in the Cape Fear region. The CFPUA has contracts with local farmers to transfer this biosolid material and then apply the material to their fields as fertilizer for crops to feed animals, creating the potential for these contaminants to enter our food chain. The same biosolid material that contains the contaminants has proven to seep into groundwater, affecting well water in immediate areas, and is subject to stormwater runoff into the local streams, eventually making its way back into the Cape Fear River, creating an endless loop of contaminants entering into our water supply. I know my time is up, but I just wanted to encourage you also to make a strong recommendation to the DEQ to please reopen the existing permit, which is currently under review. Right now, there is no reason why Chemours or Curay, who is producing the byproduct that is creating the genetics that's coming into our water, that they can't pick up again. They're in a natural hiatus from their production right now. They're scheduled to reopen their production in the fall of this year. Please reopen that existing permit while it's under review. Go in, stop them from being able to stop them specifically to discharge the Gen X. Then I know the new permit has already been stated that will be taken care of. But there's that existing loophole we don't want to see them exercise. Thank you very much for your time.
After the next speaker, Dan Tulin, Sandy Course, Glenn Totterton, Tanya Sales, Tom Newcomb, Jenny Lennon, Beth Marchisio, Lori Livens.
Good evening. My name is Sandy Goss. I'm a resident of Wilmington, North Carolina, and retired. We in North Carolina live in a family of local communities. Share problems caused by the pollution of drinking water sources like the Cape Fear River. Solving the problem of water pollution is not just a local issue and cannot be resolved at the local level. The many communities along the Cape Fear River and other similar water resources do not have the authority to make rules that cover polluters and pollutions in communities other than their own. Therefore, the issue of safe drinking water is a state issue. And communities across the state seek assurance in knowing that the state is monitoring and protecting drinking water from pollutants and polluters throughout the state, not just in New Hanover, Brunswick, and Pender counties. Citizens need and deserve strong, independent agencies like the North Carolina Department of Environmental Quality and the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency. And I have little faith that this committee and the General Assembly will do anything significant and long-lasting to help clean the Cape Fear River from all the layer after layer of sediment toxins placed there by unbridled industrial ambition. Nor do I believe the General Assembly will restore funding to the North Carolina Department of Environmental Quality so that agency can have the financial and enforcement resources to protect the environment. I hope I'm wrong, and that this committee will go back to Raleigh and advocate strongly to the General Assembly long-lasting funding and cleaning up the Cape Fear River and other drinking water sources across the state from the many toxins present there. Our citizens deserve 0% of any toxin in their drinking water, and the General Assembly must work with the federal government, Governor Cooper, DEQ, and local authorities to make that happen. We will take that kind of team effort to combat this big problem here in New Hanover County and in communities all across the state. Thank you.
Okay, we're on the last page. Dan Tulin, Glenn Totterton, Tanya Sales, Tom Newcomb, Jenny Lennon, Beth Marchisio, Lori Ivins, Darlene Powell.
Good evening. I'm Tom Newcomb. I'm affiliated with no one but myself. I'm a retired foundry engineer, so I have some sympathies and understanding of heavy industry. I'm not here to defend him. I've been drinking the water for 6 years. More importantly, two of my five grandchildren have been drinking it their entire lives. They're 4 and 6 years old. I'm here because, in my perspective, all the emphasis is on fixing the blame, closing the barn door after all the hogs are out, and there's little or nothing being done to answer the simple question, what harm has been done? was a proposal for $275,000 to test the blood of 400 people. That is about 2% of what's going to have to be done before we have this thing resolved the way it was resolved in West Virginia. I have in my opinion, this problem will never rise to the level of the C8 problem, but you got a hell of a bunch of people around here, some of them panicked out of their minds about what's going on, and you're not going to understand that until you test blood and tissue. I can't find anybody that seems to own that. If anybody here does, do something about it, because we're getting nowhere on the part that matters to me. Now, I also am a inveterate fact checker, so I got to do this. Earlier today, Professor Cahoon told us that there's 1 trillion cells in the human body. Well, a brief Google search tells you there's 37.2 trillion cells, anywhere from 15 to 70 trillion, depending on how you want to measure. Now, Professor, I know you're trying to simplify things, but don't talk down to us, please. I pay attention, I read the studies, and I find a lot of problems with it, but this thing's got to be solved, and the people in this room, somebody, can do that. But I want to know what harm has been done to my grandchildren. Thank you.
If you signed up to speak, get in line now.
Good afternoon. I'm speaking on behalf of Beth Marcosino. She was unable to stay until now. My name is Jamie Hunt. Thank you for being here. I have a quick question. When will statute GS87-98, also known as the Bernard Allen Memorial Emergency Drinking Water Fund, be enforced? We are requesting that that is enforced. Thank you.
Like, I'm Darlene Powell. I've lived in Wilmington, in the city limits of Wilmington, for over 25 years. And I've battled a health condition for a decade. And I have a 12-year-old daughter who has been raised on this water. I want you all to understand, you're mostly not from Wilmington. And we look like a upper middle class, go to the beach kind of crew. But we have over 21,000 children in Wilmington, in New Hanover County, under the age of 18, who are food insecure. That means a number of them do not have food when they leave school, and then until they come back to school the next day. I haven't heard anything from CFPUA about implementing clean water in schools. I've heard about CFPUA filing a lawsuit against Chemours. And you all don't want to fund the governor's request, and you're worried about where the money's going to go. But first of all, you could spend $2.5 million on clean water for children today. Please don't give $2.5 million or $1 million to CFPUA to file another lawsuit. We've got a federal investigation. This guy is working his tail off, and so is she. They don't have enough staff. One toxicologist is embarrassing. You didn't hear from anybody up here who was drinking well water, did you? You didn't. There's nobody who's come up here who's drinking well water. We're all people who live in the city who are drinking city water. Think about all the people who her one toxicologist is trying to serve in North Carolina. Thank you very much. I hope you all will go home and come out of your political corners and think about what you need to do for the children in North Carolina.
We want to thank the public for all their comments and your time that you came today to get the information and for you sharing your information with us. I also want to thank Secretary Cohen, Secretary Regan. Thank you so much for being here today. For everybody that drove all the way down here, I appreciate that. And I thank the local delegation, Senator Lee. I think you had some closing remarks for us.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to clarify, I talked to y'all earlier, and I'd like to request that the committee take some action. First, the governor's proposal on funding, I don't know that anyone that signed on to a letter with me was opposed to the funding. The letter related to questions we wanted to know before a decision could be made on the funding. So that's kind of the first point, and I know that this commission is looking at some of those issues. The second issue I brought up was that we need an affirmative action plan to bring clean and treated water to the citizens of this region. I know a lot of people are upset with CFUA about a variety of things, but you saw firsthand, for those of you commission members who went there today, that they are actively working on filtration processes through active carbon and other types of processes, in addition to active carbon, to filter out Gen X and this family of chemical compounds. I believe that that is the first line of defense. That is something that can be accomplished in a much shorter period of time than looking at all the epidemiology studies and trying to figure out what's due later. They're actively working on the problem now. And there's no silver bullet. May not get rid of 100% of these compounds, but you heard Dr. Perhune say that if it doesn't get rid of some of it, it will minimize some of these compounds with activated carbon. And again, there are other technologies that they're looking at using. So I would ask that this committee have staff interact with UNCW and also the CFPUA. I don't propose the CFPUA do the water quality monitoring. UNCW has been monitoring water quality in the Cape Fear River Basin for decades. What I would say that staff work with them to see what water quality testing that they envision is needed and report any of those results to the general public at large, this commission, DEQ, DHHS, because they're on the front lines. They're down here every day. They're already working on this issue. So I would request that the commission take some action in that regard today, if possible, since we are going to be closing up a session at the end of next week and there would be an opportunity to discuss funding options. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Senator Lee. Is there a consensus from the committee to have staff take up the request that Senator Lee just presented? We have a consensus for the staff to look into that possibility.
Madam Chair, can I ask a clarification?
Please.
Just wanted to see if Senator Lee would consider amending what he more or less outlined, not just being from staff in regard to UNC at Wilmington and CFPUA, but also include the other entities that are also drawing from the lower Cape Fear region, which includes entities from Brunswick as well as Pender County. So if you don't mind also to include them into this dialogue.
Yes, sir, by all means.
Well, Representative Mills, since you're on this committee, I think you can make that request if that's what you're making. Senator Lee's not on this committee.
Madam Chair, I'm more than willing to take Senator Lee's suggestion and form it into a motion as recently articulated.
Okay. We have a motion. It's been seconded.
Madam Chair, would you mind just repeating what the motion is?
Go ahead, Representative Mills. I want to be sure we get it correct.
Actually, Senator Lee's motion that you amended, really.
Well, Senator Lee can't make my motion.
Yeah, right. No, if you can, please.
Most certainly. Senator Lee, with Madam Chair's permission, feel free to interject here, but it was my understanding that Senator Lee is requesting, as this is going to be multiple hearings, but for the time being, first aspects of movement would be motion for the General Assembly staff to coordinate with UNC Chapel Hill in Wilmington, as well as the Cape Fear Public Utility Authority, Pender County, Brunswick County, those who are drawing the lower Cape Fear water source to begin dialogue on a proper plan of action to address the matter we have before us. So, Madam Chair, at your discretion, feel free to simply like to amends that motion.
I think that's the motion. Is there still a second?
Yes, my second stands. Thank you.
Senator Smith Ingram.
Yes, Madam Chair, I have a question as to whether or not this coordinated planning is going to have the capacity or the ability to provide for immediate safe drinking water to the Wilmington community.
Representative Millis, yeah.
Most certainly, Senator, the aspects of the charge would be the coordination of staff here along with the administration and the bodies who have been affected. Is the mission is to immediately get towards the aspects of clean drinking water, which means aspects of getting all things on the table. So, which includes possible proposals from existing grant funds, future proposals. This is an all cards on the table motion, by my understanding.
Staff, this would also have to have, we can make a recommendation from this committee, but it should certainly be something the General Assembly would vote on.
It sounds like it's based on a possible appropriation.
Yes. It's based on a possible appropriation, and the whole General Assembly would have to vote. Yes, Senator.
So then we can assume that we will also be anticipating that as we move into session tomorrow and subsequent days, that we will also be issuing or bringing up a recommendation as a committee on supporting the governor's $2.5 million request to address the Gen X issue.
Senator Smith Ingram, I think that we're planning on having another meeting in September, and that will be something we'd have to bring before the committee. Now, Senator Lee is free to bring up any legislation he would like to bring up.
Madam Chair.
Yes.
Thank you. I just want to clarify that the motion on the table also includes the coordination of DEQ and DHHS staff.
That's what I understand. So there's a motion before us. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion carries. I'd also like to thank New Hanover County staff. You've done a fantastic job. You coordinated everything. We really appreciate it. And the tour today at the waste treatment facility, was wonderful. We all learned a whole lot. We appreciate that. And for the public that came tonight and today, I really appreciate how considerate you were of other speakers and how you listened to what was presented today. I appreciate that. And we've had a wonderful experience here in Wilmington. We appreciate you inviting us. And are there any other closing remarks from the chair? And we will be letting you know about the next meeting. And we plan to keep, I hope the public will stay involved and still send us your comments and let us know if you have other things you want us to know about. Thank you, and we stand adjourned.
Pretty much next week, maybe we can get together, three of us, and figure out where we're going. All right, about that. I think we'll have plenty to do this week, but it sounds like we'll be there for a day or two.